And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This is the Hagman and the Hagman Report for today. It is Monday, June 23rd, 2014. I'm Doug Hagman, usually the co-host, along with my son Joe Hagman. However, Joe is off today celebrating his wedding anniversary. But folks, you're about to hear an incredible three-hour program, 3 hours of unbiased, uncensored news and information. We have a very special guest for you tonight. But I'll tell you what, as far as I'm concerned, you're listening to the only show on the airwaves where the news is presented to you in 3D. We look well beyond the headlines, the bylines, bringing the news behind the news. You talk about being able to screw something up in a big way, technology-based. You know, here I am in the studio trying to balance things out. I was uploading things and messing around with things, and I can't even make a simple connection on a network connection. I'm going to tell you that. So I'm so thankful to Troy at Christians United for bailing me out. I think he's bailing me out. I think he had bailed me out, or he is in the process thereof. Apparently, I don't know how to connect properly to guests. That's an important thing to know when you're doing a live broadcast. But for the new listeners, and thanks for checking in from Kentucky, from Tennessee, from a whole bunch of states central part of the United States, I want to just say welcome. Also, all across the United States, I want to say welcome. If you're a new listener, let's just see here what we have. All right. I guess I should be on the right, on the proper call here, shouldn't I? All right. There we go. All right, folks. Our special guest tonight is Kevin Shipp. Now, Kevin Shipp is, I consider, a man of character and integrity, and he is. He's a friend of mine. He's the author of the book, From the Company of Shadows. And this book is an extremely interesting book. His website, by the way, his heart is linked right off of our website. Go to our website, homelandsecurityus.com. On the right-hand side, there is his website. It's Kevin M. Shipp, SHIPP.com. The M is important. That's KevinMShipp.com. He was a decorated CIA officer. He held several sensitive high-level positions operating in over 20 foreign countries, participating in numerous life-threatening assignments. I got to tell you, in his book, he does recount some of those operations, and he's got some humorous events, usually that are not accessible to the public in the book, included with excerpts from his previous book, From the Cold, CIA Secrecy Operations. Mr. Shipp has provided in his book additional detail disputing the account of reporter Bob Woodward's alleged deathbed conversation with CIA Director William Casey during the Iran-Contra affair. There's many other exposés in his book. It's a great book. It's a great read. I recommend it, From the Company of Shadows. That's Kevin M. Shipp. Now, having said that, Mr. Shipp, are you on?
Yes, Doug, I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us, and thank you for your patience with me. You could tell I'm not not very good technologically, you know. So,
no problem whatsoever.
I want to thank you very much for joining us. Let's get right into it, Kevin. For those not, by the way, you were on last August.
Correct.
With us, yeah, and I had a great conversation with you. By the way, Mr. Shipp is also a member of the Citizens Commission of Benghazi. Visit his website, KevinMShipp.com. Like I said, go to HomelandSecurityUS.com, click on the link, and it'll take you right to his website. Of interest, of great interest to me, and I know that our mutual friend within the intelligence industry is talking as well, of great interest to me is Benghazi.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you're on the Citizens Commission of Benghazi, and all I hear, you know, all I've been hearing lately is, you know, the talk about the security, and to me, I'm thinking, man, you know, to me, now maybe you might have a different take on this, and I don't think you do. But to me, that this talk about security and talk about the talking about security and then talking about the lack thereof, I should say, is taking away from the real bigger issue of the fact that there were some operations going on there allegedly that were sending some. It was a weapons running operation, and they didn't want security there. There was, or at least not, they didn't want to have draw attention to themselves for crying out loud. Is that what you're seeing, or what's? Why don't you go ahead and talk a little bit about Benghazi? Let's get it rolling here.
Sure, I'd be glad to. And let me just start off by saying that my comments are my own from my own research. I don't represent, obviously, the Citizens Commission on Benghazi. We've got a report out on their website for that. So this is me talking based on my research and the documents that I've dug up, of course. And my membership on the commission has obviously provided a lot of information for my review. Also, the security situation in Benghazi, as poor as it was, could have been and probably was poor for a reason. There's a lot of focus on the lack of security, which was terrible there, and there's no doubt about that. There were diplomatic security agents on Ambassador Stevens when there really should have been a team of contract SEALs or counter-assault team, which there wasn't. But the real story in Benghazi, I think without question, goes beyond security and really far beyond, and doesn't have much to do with it. There were things going on in Benghazi that this particular administration does not want us to know because they're very possibly a violation of international law, and they also may be a violation of U.S. law also and done without the approval of Congress. One of the most alarming things regarding that, although the security issue is important, it's kind of a sidetrack from the real issue of what was going on there, the reason Ambassador Stevens was there. They call it a consulate. It was not a consulate. Then they call it a special mission post. It was really basically a safe house. This all started with the administration assisting in the overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi, which in itself was nefarious because Gaddafi had come in and was an ally of the United States and was actually providing intelligence to us back here through the ambassador to Libya in Washington. And was warning the U.S. government that al-Qaeda was trying to gain a foothold in Libya. So during the pre-stages before the attack, Gaddafi had even offered to take asylum in another country if that's what the U.S. wanted to continue to work with us. Instead of doing that, the Department of State and, of course, the Obama administration supported the Islamic jihadists in Libya and overthrew Gaddafi, who was eventually murdered. And in essence, that was a de facto removal of a foreign leader who actually considered himself, as crazy as he was, considered himself an ally of the United States. And the Obama administration literally assisted in his removal, which eventually led to his death. That's the first alarming thing. Essentially, we assisted in the overthrow of a war leader. Secondly, there's a real reason for this massive cover-up. I think this makes Watergate look like a Sunday school class with maybe the arrival of the current IRS things going on. But it is pretty clear that the Obama administration and the CIA under the new director, former director David Petraeus and John Brennan, were running guns through Benghazi to Turkey and ultimately to Islamic rebels in Syria. That is the huge story. And I think that is the story that they are terrified will come out because it has pretty significant ramifications, and some of them could be possibly criminal. And there's some folks looking into that now, the difference between or the connection between executive privilege and violating U.S. and international law. But the, The primary point was the gun running that was going on. Guns were being funneled into Benghazi. There were caches of weapons in Benghazi. There were training camps where they were training the Islamic rebels in Benghazi, and it is pretty clear to me that Ambassador Stevens was involved in this. Those arms were then being transferred from Benghazi with the aid of and to Turkey up to bases in Jordan, and then ultimately to the rebels in Syria. That's a very serious operation and a breach I think, at least the trust of Congress. There are so many tentacles to this thing. Saudi Arabia paid for and assisted in providing weapons, which the CIA allowed into Benghazi. Also, Qatar provided weapons into Benghazi, all of which were designated to go to the rebels in Syria with the intent of overthrowing the regime of Bashar Assad. That was their goal. That was Saudi Arabia's big dream, was to get him out of the way because he was standing in the way of their caliphatic dreams, essentially, and some of their oil problems. Another really interesting twist, it has been alleged that Mr. Brennan, now director of the CIA, converted to Islam 20 years ago when he was chief of station in Saudi Arabia. That was witnessed by an FBI agent who has come out and stated that publicly. And I have heard statements from Brennan himself that would back that up. For example, he claims to have visited Mecca and Medina, and you cannot do that unless you're a practicing Muslim. They won't even let you in. So the jury may be out on that one, but I think there's some pretty solid indications that may be the case. If it is, he would be the ultimate choice for Barack Obama to place as director of the CIA and connect with Saudi Arabia and run these guns into Benghazi, which I think is pretty clear what was going on, and that is the big picture here. Also, what is alarming regarding this is, let's remember that Saudi Arabia is the chief global sponsor of Wahhabi Islam. Now, Wahhabi Islam is the strictest form of Islam, which calls for the purging of all infidels, that would be us, and the establishment of a global caliphate. This is the Saudi Arabia that we have climbed into friendship with for oil, and this is the same Saudi Arabia that has been disseminating radical Islamic jihadist propaganda, paperwork, and training materials into mosques throughout the United States for several years now. And our government has looked the other way for a couple of administrations for the sake of oil. So another alarming fact is the operations in Benghazi, it looks like pretty clearly now, the Obama administration was coordinating with the Muslim Brotherhood, and Morsi out of Egypt was also involved in the gun running going through Benghazi. So you can see that while people are focusing on the security situation, which was indeed poor, and I feel for the poor diplomatic security agents there, because they were possibly set up, at the very least put in a place where they were not trained to be. But the security situation is certainly far aside from the bigger picture, and that's what was going on in and through Benghazi. And ultimately, that was funding weapons and arms and equipment up to the Islamic jihadists in Syria to overthrow the Assad regime.
All right. Now, I've written extensively on this, Mr. Shipp, since really right after it happened, and we had postulated, or we had presented information, the very same information that you're speaking of, that this was an arms running operation that, in fact, there were numerous warehouses throughout the Benghazi area that held weapons that were ultimately shipped northward through Turkey and Jordan and other areas, ultimately destined for Syria. The goal, of course, was the removal of Bashar Assad. There would be really, in essence, no civil war. And would you agree with that statement, that there wouldn't be any civil war in Syria, at least not to the extent that it is and it has been, without Western influence and involvement?
No, I would agree totally with that. If it was at all, it would have been a very small revolt. But with our training and the massive amount of arms that we, the Saudis and Qatar, pumped into Syria, in my view, we are largely responsible for even the number of deaths that have occurred there. I think that's certainly true.
Okay. Yeah, we're looking at the best estimates that we can come up with right now, nearly 200,000 dead, perhaps even more, but somewhere between 175,000 and 200,000 dead, and a couple of million refugees that, I mean, you're not talking about street people. You're talking about middle-class people that are fleeing Syria. It's just an incredible situation. And as my friend is fond of saying, in the intelligence world, you know, Syria will not implode but explode, and the pieces will touch, you know, a lot of places, perhaps even Saudi Arabia and elsewhere throughout the world.
Right, and they're beginning to do that, yes.
Yeah, and you know, I'm one of the things early on, and I need to ask you about this, and we haven't talked about this much at all in detail, you and I, but one of the things that really bothered me early on was the involvement of current CIA in a number of things. He was Obama's national security advisor on the campaign trail. He was affixed to government agencies or government subcontractors that were performing duties that included but were not limited to passport operations.
That's correct.
And he had gotten caught. His company had gotten caught as being one of two that were involved in the passport office break-in back in 2008.
That's correct.
Okay. Any information on that that you found different from mine, or in addition to mine, or you want to comment on that?
Brennan, yeah. Mr. Brennan goes all the way back to being a campaign advisor for Barack Obama. So the two have been joined at the hip from when he ran for office. That connection, I think, has a couple of tentacles, similar political ideologies, perhaps attempts to connect more with the Muslim world and things like that. Mr. Brennan worked himself up as the Undersecretary for Counterterrorism under Barack Obama just when Benghazi was happening, and it is very possible, and there's some FOIAs out for this, that it was indeed John Brennan that instituted the initial operations going in to Libya, and that was basically his planning. Later on, he was rewarded with the position of the director of the CIA, and that may have also been because of his close connections with Saudi Arabia. So Mr. Brennan has had a long history with Barack Obama and has had both feet in the cement when it comes to Libya from the very beginning.
You know, both you and you were with the CIA for quite some time, and folks, we're talking with Mr. Kevin Shipp, author of the marvelous book From the Company of Shadows. His website, kevinmshipp.com. Go to homelandsecurityus.com, click on the link on the right-hand side. It'll take you directly to his website, From the Company of Shadows, his book. Highly recommend his book. Have you ever met Mr. Brennan?
I've never met him personally, no. And I kind of think he probably, I understand that he knows very well about me, and my story has been on his desk. But I have never met him personally.
All right. There are so many characters in this. This cast of characters. Now we've got Abu Matala, or Katala, I'm sorry. But we'll come to him in a minute. I'm still working on Brennan here. What's your feelings with respect to him actually being a Muslim? And if that is the case, let you answer that question. Do you feel that Mr. Brennan has, in fact, converted to Islam?
In my personal opinion, based on the eyewitness account of John Guindola, the FBI agent, who still sticks to his story, that's one part. The second part, as I mentioned earlier, were statements out of Brennan's own mouth where he said he visited Mecca and Medina and they were wonderful places. Well, you do not get into Mecca and Medina unless you are a practicing Muslim and you have been referred by a practicing imam to get in there. So for me, those two put together are a pretty good indication that, yes, he indeed is a practicing Muslim, which if I was in the CIA right now would absolutely blow my mind. I know the folks in there are not real happy right now, and morale is at an all-time low. But those two factors together indicate to me that is very possibly true.
Okay. Yeah, I just you hear things, and I just want to be as really open, level-headed as possible about this, because to me, if that's the case, and if one considers Islam a political system just as much as a religious system, then, of course, we're looking at a whole different side of things here domestically and how things are being decided at the intelligence level. And to me, talk about mind-blowing.
It's quite chilling, yes.
Indeed it is. So now, having said that, Barack Obama, do you think that he has come out in support of Islam, and I obviously we're not, I don't think anyone's going to find out what his true religious affiliation is or what his heart will, you know, where his heart's at, but he certainly is inclined or biased towards the Islamic faith, to me anyway. Any thoughts on that, on how if that perhaps has weighed into the Middle East, the Arab Spring situation as it was being built up back as he was coming of term, shall we say?
I would say without question. There's a favorite verse of mine that goes like this, by their fruits you will know them. And I have watched Barack Obama since he first came into office. I've examined all of his speeches, primarily, especially the actions that he has taken, and it is at the very least alarming, excuse me, at least for me. For example, just after he was elected on June 4th, 2009, in his speech in Cairo, he quoted the Quran, chapter 5, 32 and 9, 119. What's relevant with those is he stopped and didn't quote the rest of those passages. The rest of those passages order punishment for non-Muslims, including crucifixion. They talk about fighting against the unbelievers, Jews, and Christians. And he makes the statement that he who opposes the Prophet Muhammad will not go unpunished. Now, what president in the history of this country has ever gone out to a Muslim country and made those statements? And it gets worse from there. In April, if I may continue.
Yeah, please do.
In April of 2008, you remember he came out with that speech claiming that, well, Christians cling to their guns and their religion. Another speech in 2009, he ordered monograms symbolizing Jesus' name to be covered with sheets before he would speak at that event. Excuse me. Now, that is a Sharia mandate. That is an Islamic mandate. This is the President of the United States ordering them to cover symbols of Jesus' name in the name of Islam, the President of the United States. In March of 2009, again, he claims he's a Christian. I'll get to that in a moment. He ordered $50 million to be given to the UN Population Agency, which promotes abortion throughout the world. May 2009, he declines to host services for the National Day of Prayer, but instead, he hosts the White House Islamic iftar dinner in honor of Ramadan. Then, in May 2009, he nominates three pro-abortion ambassadors to the Vatican, upsetting the entire Catholic world, once again calling himself a Christian. In October 2010, he deliberately omits the phrase about the Creator when quoting the Declaration of Independence. This is the President of the United States quoting the Declaration of Independence and deleting the word Creator. And he didn't just do it once, he did it seven times. I think, as most of us probably know, he refused to allow the World War I cross to be re-erected as actually ordered by a court. He stood against that. On May 2009, he ordered added to the administration's terrorism dictionary pro-life advocates, calling them violent and racist. And once again, just to add to that, in 2010, he avoids any biblical holidays, doesn't attend any, but he recognizes and attends all the traditional Muslim holidays. And I've got a list of quotes here from him that they're all pro-Islamic, of course. But it gets even worse than that, Doug. And I've got the names and identities of these folks. He has appointed five acting members of the Muslim Brotherhood to his national security team as national security advisors. And I think we all know the background of the Muslim Brotherhood, probably the oldest, most widespread terrorist organization in the world, actually acting close to the president as his national security advisors. Now, if you would have told me this as an agency officer 10 years ago, I would have said you're crazy. But this is all documented. He's had several secret meetings with the Muslim Brotherhood at the White House and the Department of State, and what he has just done is made a move in court to make his visitor log secret, and the court ruled that they could be secret. So now we don't even know who's visiting him. But once again, what president in our past has done that? The list goes on. He propped up elections and supported the Muslim Brotherhood government in Egypt. He gave him $1.5 billion. He gave him F-16 fighter jets. This was the government of Mr. Morsi, an active supporter, promoter of Sharia law, and this administration gave him $1.5 billion. When the people overthrew Morsi because he was implementing Sharia, and what you don't hear is Christians were being killed and crucified under that administration, Obama refused to assist the new government and blocked any further financial support. I don't know if anybody saw that turnover in the ousting of Morsi, but it was like Egypt's 4th of July. It gave you goosebumps on your neck to see the Muslim Brotherhood kicked out of Egypt by its own people and a peaceful government brought in there. Like I said before, by their fruits, you will know them. He has, and some of you may know this, recently fired 9 decorated generals. 3 of those generals that he fired were disagreeing with his cover-up in Benghazi. 2, and this is chilling, 2 of those generals that were fired oversaw the U.S. nuclear program here domestically in the United States. He fired or removed 197 military officers just in the last 5 years, and the military is being forced to eliminate terms in their training such as radical Islam, jihad, Islamic terrorism. They have all been removed from all the training in Departments of Defense, Department of State, and the CIA. The DOD has been ordered to silence Christian speech and remove crosses from their bases' chapels. This is all coming down from the White House, and in my view, a lot of input from Valerie Jarrett, Obama's chief advisor, who was born in Iran, by the way. So he claims that he is a Christian, but when you look at what he does, you see a picture of the exact opposite. Now, I am not going to put words in his mouth or ideas in his head or purport to say or that I know what he's thinking, but there's an Islamic practice called taqiyya. And what taqiyya is any Muslim can lie to a heathen if it promotes the cause of Allah. They can even call themselves a Christian if it promotes them establishing Allah's will wherever they are. So in this humble former agency officer's view, if you look at the actions of Barack Hussein Obama, what you don't see a Christian. You see someone who is connected directly to the Islamic world and is promoting Islam to the horrific extent of providing arms and missiles to jihadist rebels overseas in Libya and Syria.
All right, Kevin. Fantastic, fantastic summation of Barack Hussein Obama. Obviously, followed by or followed after John O'Brien. Folks, if you're just joining us, and if you've listened to Mr. Shipp before, and if you've listened to this program before, you might think, well, why are we going over this right, again? Just think of yourself sitting in the seat of a juror, being on a jury in a trial, listening to evidence being laid out before you. And now combine this information, this foundational information, with the Benghazi act of murder and perhaps a violation of international and domestic laws. And also think through, and we're going to get to this here during this this trial or this program, we're going to get through this to where this is all going to, how this perhaps might all play out. But Kevin, okay, so, and he's this renegade in chief, as we have dubbed him because of his Secret Service code name Renegade. He's certainly living up to that moniker.
I'd say that's fitting.
Yeah. When you look up, folks, I urge you to look up Renegade in the dictionary, and there you'll find Lawless One and Traitor and all sorts of neat synonyms. But so we've got the Renegade in Chief, and of course, as you so eloquently pointed out, his biases toward Islam. All of this, of course, playing into, in my view, into the Arab Spring, and then the what would you call this, the Arab Spring, and including Libya, is of course Egypt, but Libya. Would you call this, Kevin, a restructuring of the power base in the Middle East?
Without question. As piece by piece, country by country, the Middle East is being moving rapidly, almost by the day, to the caliphate that, of course, is the mandate of Islam. And we now in Iraq with ISIS, which contains members that were trained by the U.S. in Jordan, and there's even photographs of ISIS with Saudi and U.S. equipment and especially Saudi missiles. Yes, the Middle East is now transitioning over. Essentially, it's very alarming to a potential Middle Eastern caliphate, and these countries are falling. That's why they want Syria so bad, because Syria is resisting that. But what we're seeing is a total push toward the takeover of the Middle East and the establishment of this caliphate, and it appears that our own president backing that.
All right. Folks, let me take you back just briefly to July 27th, 1974. And again, you might think, what does this have to do with anything? The full text of the Articles of Impeachment adopted by the House Judiciary Committee were filed on that date. There were three articles. And the first one was pertaining to the break-in at the Democratic headquarters. The second one, and I find this interesting as well as it relates to the current IRS situation, was using Nixon allegedly using the IRS's, of course, his own personal punishing agency against his enemies. And of course, the third article had to do with the cover-up, the lying, and four different occasions, and disobeying subpoenas. So compare what's going on today to 40 years ago, and you'll see, ladies and gentlemen, how far we have come in our tolerance, apparently, or at least the tolerance of the House and the Senate. The elected officials have really has grown, or perhaps not so. Perhaps we've been captured, overtaken. And I would urge everyone, folks, to look up the Articles of Impeachment from Watergate from July 27, 1974, just as a refresher course. But, Kevin, to what end? The caliphate, to what end? This reshaping, to what end? The takeover by the subjugation of all Middle Eastern countries and the Levant by the Muslim Brotherhood, where would that lead?
Well, you know, I think what they're trying to do is go back to the old Ottoman Empire, where they had this massive, gigantic Islamic caliphate that dominated the world. That is not only their dream, they consider it their mandate to set up this caliphate globally and establish a global theocracy. That runs throughout Islam, whether it's radical or moderate. And, of course, the moderates are silent, which, that speaks in itself. But this is a mandate from the Quran itself that they establish this global theocracy or caliphate. So they have every intention of doing that. They're commanded to do that. Every Muslim is supposed to comply to that. And I think, their overarching goal is a return to the Ottoman Empire and, without question, the eventual destruction of the United States.
Okay. And that's the bigger picture, folks. And that's my argument. I've written prolifically about this, about not only the Arab Spring, but about the death race to Damascus via Benghazi. Let's go back to the renegade, his associates as well. We talked about Brennan. We talked about Obama himself. What about Valerie Jarrett, Kevin, in your estimation? Both her influence, her Iranian leanings, bias, birth, where does she fit into all of this?
Well, she is a very important character in all of this, including Benghazi. I understand that she has the nickname the Night Stalker. That was reported in the London Daily Mail. And she's called that because she has 24/7 access to President and Mrs. Obama. She is their chief advisor. Now, it is apparent at times when Barack Obama is absent, for example, playing golf or at a fundraiser, someone is running the White House. And I think I am absolutely convinced that someone is Valerie Jarrett. She was the secret architect of Obama's strategy, I think, in Benghazi. I think there's enough evidence out there to indicate that she was behind the firing or retiring of generals that would not agree with the new dictatorship of thought in the Department of Defense. She watches over everything that is said and done in the White House without question. I think it is Valerie Jarrett who is behind most of what we're seeing. She was born in Shiraz, Iran. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean anything of itself, but she was born in Iran. She has access to the most sensitive foreign affairs and national security information of anyone in the administration. She started out as the deputy chief for the Chicago mayor. We all know about Chicago politics, kind of the mafia-style politics that are run out of there. She hired Michelle Obama back in Chicago to work for. She is the one who took Obama under her wing to teach him about politics and political things. She introduced them to the wealthiest, better connected in Chicago, many of which who were practicing and declared Marxists. She's a close friend of Bill Ayers, an avowed practicing Marxist. And her father-in-law was a Communist Party activist and also tied into Chicago politics. So this is the lady that has direct access to the President of the United States and, in my view, is instituting a lot of the policies for him. You know, I don't know if anyone's aware of the old book, The Manchurian Candidate. I believe it was a Soviet's groomed person to eventually come up through politics and into the White House. I'm not saying this is to that extreme, but if we've ever had a president that appears to have been put in place by very wealthy sources that want this kind of ideology in the White House, we seem to have that here. And part of that evidence is when there's a huge crisis going on, our president goes out and plays golf right during the event or goes to a fundraiser like he did the next day after Benghazi. Well, when he's gone, who's running the White House? Well, in my view, it's Valerie Jarrett.
And folks, to me, that is extremely important for everyone to realize. We often talk about Obama. We often talk about Hillary Clinton, which she's on deck next. You know, what we're doing right now is laying the foundation, in my view, laying the foundation, because we will be getting into Benghazi a little bit more. The nuances you may have not heard or read that Mr. Shipp is very well-versed on. But having said that, you know, we're into character development here in this. I would liken it to a trial, I suppose, or even merely a deposition, if you will, where evidence is laid out, and you can decide for yourself. And many have decided, but a lot of times when we talk with our families, we talk with people that we know, we're short on facts. We're big on opinions all the time, but we're short on facts. And facts are what you are hearing tonight, and the facts are coming from someone that I admire and respect and who's got a lot of character and integrity, and that is Kevin M. Shipp, kevinmshipp.com, and that's a link off of homelandsecurityus.com. Please visit his website. He's got links on the side as well as, his book from the Company of Shadows. I definitely recommend it. I've got it right here on my desk right now. In fact, I was reading a little bit earlier when our power was out, reading it by sunlight, actually, through the window, getting back up to speed on that. So it's a great book, by the way. But, okay, Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State, brilliant move, don't you think?
Yeah. And once again, her views and ideology fit right into the president's personal ideology. And there's a lot of things that Secretary Clinton did in office that fit right in and supported President Obama's connections to and promotion of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Now, okay. Kevin, is this a good time to start getting really specific on Benghazi? I know that you did initially, at least the with respect to the overall aspects of Benghazi, where there was, you know, the weapons running. But what do you know specifically about that night of September 11th, 2012, that you can tell, that you feel comfortable in telling, you know, that wouldn't compromise any type of litigation pending or possible, or whatever, you know, whatever is coming down the road, any investigation that's coming down the road? What can you tell us about that night?
Yeah, sure. And again, these are my comments, not the comments of the Citizens Commission on Benghazi. I think everybody's aware of that. That night, I think, was an operation gone wrong. I think the idea was to get these arms through Benghazi without any feathers being ruffled. It is apparent to me, and I think there's enough information and evidence out there. Mr. Stevens, I'll call him, met with the Turkish consul general the evening just before the attack. I believe it was at 7:30 in the evening. The attack happened somewhere around 9 o'clock. In his own testimony, the Turkish consul general stated that there was no riot, there was no protest. As a matter of fact, there wasn't even anybody in the area. So when the attack happened, I think the administration went crazy. Now, Barack Obama disappeared for several hours that evening, and none of the White House spokesmen will say where he was. There is indication that Ambassador Stevens met with the Turkish consul general to discuss the fact that Russia had now observed through overhead reconnaissance these weapons, firearms, or large arms, rather, being moved up to Turkey. And Putin had protested. As a matter of fact, I think he had protested to the United Nations the fact that the Saudi government, U.S. and Qatar, were moving weapons through Benghazi up to Syria, and Putin actually had the photographs of that going on. Turkey was getting nervous, so they met with Stevens to talk about what was happening and the fact that Putin was now getting involved. There's also indication, and this is what nobody wants to look into, the press at large won't even touch, Putin was and is connected with the government in Tehran. There's some indication that there was some Iranian support behind the attack on the quote-unquote special missions post in Benghazi, that Iran was also involved in that and stirred up the eventual attack. And that's something that the press won't touch. And the most concerning part is no one will look into this. I think that's because if the truth was to come out, God willing it will, but if the truth was to come out, you could have some serious criminal violations on the part of high-level folks in our current administration. But that looks like what was going on. The Benghazi attack, as horrible and awful as it was not something that the Obama administration, in my view, had planned. As a matter of fact, it kind of messed the operations up a little bit. And with such a surprise, this is just my personal theory, is that's why Obama was missing after the attacks. He was off trying to figure out what the heck to do next because the entire covert operation was unraveling, and the eventual goal of getting these arms up to the Syrian Islamicists was unraveling fast. And of course, another thing was the CIA had a very large annex in Libya, and I think it was one of the biggest, if not the largest annex in that part of the world. And so they were engaged in some very sizable covert activity out of Tripoli, and in this particular case, the annex itself in Benghazi was quite large. So there were some significant operations going on out of Benghazi, collecting the weapons cache left over from Gaddafi, looking for and trying to find the chemical weapons that had disappeared, and that's a whole other story, claiming that Assad used chemical weapons. Maybe we can go there on another broadcast.
Oh, but yeah.
That is very suspicious. When the rebels were photographed or were bragging and showing photographs of them holding chemical weapon armory that would have been exactly what had been used in those attacks. But so I am not convinced that those chemical attacks were done by the Assad regime. As a matter of fact, I'm convinced otherwise. So there is so much to hide in Benghazi on the part of the current administration and White House that they obviously would do anything to stop it from getting out, even going so far as this ridiculous internet video, which Secretary of State Clinton released the night of the attack as the cause of the protests. And we all know that that was entirely bogus now from the very beginning. So I think that is what the real story behind Benghazi. It is serious. Again, it's possibly a very significant violation of international law, a violation of U.S. law done without the approval of Congress. And if that is ever proven, we will have – this will make – I think it already does make Watergate look like a Sunday school class.
Yeah. Well, Watergate, Iran-Contra, anything – yes, I totally agree with you on that. The news that we're hearing now, and in fact, I happen to see this, Israel, and it's my contention, Kevin, it's my contention based on information from my intelligence source and sources, plural, that the intention was to get the U.S. and NATO to put an air cap over Syria, considering the refugees and the movement of the refugees for their alleged protection, which would, of course, serve to get Assad to expedite the removal of Assad. And, of course, in doing so, you'd have surgical strikes and what have you that would benefit the anti-Assad terrorists and based on everything we're seeing. Now, today, over the weekend here, we hear where Israel had fired into Syria, and we're also hearing as well some admissions that the anti-Assad terrorists, in particular ISIS, is going well into Syria and back out to Iraq. I mean, it's kind of a revolving door there at the border between Syria or no border, you know.
I think so, yeah.
But one thing I found interesting is to me, and tell me if you're seeing an acceleration through this new front, southwestern or southeastern Syria, southwestern Iraq with ISIS. You see this as being Western funded or at least Western propelled in many respects?
I think it was Western initiated, in that a lot of ISIS was trained and armed through and by the United States and Saudi Arabia. So at least they were initiated to get in and get into and start going back and forth from Iraq to Syria. And what a coincidence that now we're talking about working with Iran against ISIS, which is something almost laughable. It's almost laughable.
And this is something that many people, including me, I've got a hard time understanding this. Now, I guess we have to think it on different levels and multiple levels, but how do we team up with Iran, which is really a proxy of Syria or of Russia and
right.
China, okay? And yet we're fighting Russia by proxy. I mean, how does this all happen? How do these relationships develop? I mean, wouldn't this be contrary to our best interests militarily and strategically?
For every other administration and every credible national security advisor and every intelligence officer I've ever talked to, they can't believe that this is even being talked about, much less probably will be done. Once again, we have the Islamic connection here, and that seems to be the tie that binds everything together, is this Islamic connection and support for Islamic movements and Islamic regimes, and I think the administration has been trying, and I know they have, covertly for several years to connect up with Iran, and now it's just coming out in the open. But it defies national security. It defies anything any other administration has even thought of. It is absolutely bizarre that the United States, this administration, would consider working with Iran, which wants Iraq and wants to establish a larger Iran. And we all know what their ultimate goal is. That's the annihilation of Israel and the end of the United States of America.
I agree. And of course, one of the mechanisms by which they're going to do that is the killing off of the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency,
exactly.
Which is, I mean, that's the petrodollar. And of course, do you see that playing out, Kevin, in the short term, intermediate, long term? I know you don't have a crystal ball or a stopwatch or you know, a date and time, but I mean, it seems to be close at hand or closer at hand given the current state of affairs.
Yeah. And what I do is I look at kind of the bits and pieces of information that slip out, and then you try to analyze what they mean. The president has made at least two trips to Brussels, Belgium, maybe more. He's had several meetings with the International Monetary Fund. His trips to Brussels, Belgium, we all know the IMF has a headquarters there, and they've got a huge computer that is part of the IMF. The press has not covered why the president is going to Brussels, Belgium, who he's meeting with. It has come out that he's met with the International Monetary Fund. We know that there was a very short little blurb on the press that both Russia and China have come out and said that they are going to stop recognizing the U.S. dollar as a world currency. This is why while the president scrambles around meeting with the IMF and travels to Brussels, in my opinion, what we see going on in Ukraine and Crimea, which in large part the U.S. stirred up during the Sochi Olympics, John McCain was in there stirring up the rebels. I think a lot of this, especially what's coming out or being released to the press, is to hide what is happening with the U.S. dollar, which is getting very close to collapse, which of course would be a calamity for the stock market in the U.S. economy. Now, most economists agree that is an eventuality. It's going to happen someday. But if you look at the facts that are slipping out in Obama's trips and who he's meeting with and where he's going, it could be very closer than we think. We could be in an impending financial crisis, and they're using all these, touting all these world crises just to keep that hidden in the back. I think there's a lot of truth to that.
Interesting. And I can see how that would, the diversions play. I think, you know what, I mean, this is just me looking at this from an investigative point of view. You can see there are so many diversions. I'm writing an article. It's titled Washington Whack-A-Mole is the working title. I mean, we've got the IRS crimes. With the IRS, you get the crimes. Pick a scandal, pick a hot spot. I mean, my goodness. But amid all of the fog, all of this dust cloud, you've got this nugget. You've got this core element, it seems, that are doing things. Like you mentioned, John McCain stirring up in the Ukraine. And of course, during the Olympics, Putin had his hands tied. But now, I mean, we've poked them in Ukraine. We had the IMF on the ground in Ukraine,
yep.
I think before anyone else.
That's right.
So, you know, it's obviously this is about the takedown in part of the U.S. dollar. From your intelligence background, why would we do this to ourselves? Because that's what it seems like we're doing, is it not?
Well, you know, that's a million-dollar question. What the heck is going on here? Now, Putin has put out an arrest warrant for George Soros as part of the backers of what he considers the New World Order and the One World Currency. And at first that sounds a little crazy, but when you dig into it a little bit, just you go out and do a simple search, you'll find out that the International Monetary Fund, because of the crisis in the EU and the financial problems and debt in the United States, the IMF has proposed what they call special drawing rights. You can go in and Google this. It's all over the place. Special drawing rights would eliminate country currencies and have digital currency in the IMF from which a country could come in and draw certain amounts of money for its economies. President Obama has come out publicly and stated that he supports that concept and would support the IMF SDR. That is clear. It's out there on the net. Anybody can find it. It's extremely chilling. I think that pretty much could be the compass that points to what is really happening.
It's amazing. And I know Putin has not forgotten him being a colonel in the KGB during the takedown of the U.S. Or the Soviet Union. He has not forgotten how the Soviet Union was taken down in part through the takedown of the ruble, of the currency of the Soviet Union. So
the U.S. helped happen. Yes, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. And so as I see it too, and I'm looking at this as well, you mentioned something interesting too. About the U.S. teaming up with Iran, who's also has tied up the hip with Russia, wouldn't that make essentially Putin and Obama on the same side? And I suppose at some level that they are in some sublime way. Is that an accurate statement?
Well, in my view, it's almost like the U.S. is trying to court Iran away from Putin. Putin has become a very interesting character in that he has voiced his public opposition to any new world order, one world currency, one world government, hence his indictment of George Soros. And Putin has come out publicly and stated that he will take whatever steps are necessary to protect Russia's Orthodox Christian population from the Islamic insertion, which has happened in Chechnya and other places. So Putin is much more complex than the media is portraying him. They portray him as a former KGB major, which he was, a chilling chess player, which he is, extremely intelligent and manipulative, which he is. But I think he's much more complex, including in the Ukraine and Crimea, than the press will report. Pat Buchanan wrote an entire article on Putin and Putin's change in character in terms of his support for Orthodox Christianity and his resistance to Islam. As a matter of fact, he's made the Quran illegal in some parts of Russia, calling it a violent document. So there's a lot of Putin that's not getting out in the press that plays into this whole thing. There's a whole other side of him that the U.S. media, and that's a whole other story why they don't report on things, but that the U.S. media is not reporting on it. But Pat Buchanan, being the old ultimate conservative, came out with a column on that, on some of Putin's real motives. So this is much more complex than it appears regarding Putin at first glance.
Interesting. Yeah, obviously very complex man, very complex situation. Before we move away, and as we're approaching the top of the hour here, going backwards a little bit in time, and I apologize for rehashing this, but one of the questions I had about Brett Brennan being put into the current position as CIA director, and I'm sure you can speak to this. Do you suppose the need to get Brennan into that position may have had something to do with the story being leaked or the honey trap being put in place in the first place to take out Petraeus, if you think about it in the context of that Middle East dust-up Benghazi attack?
I am absolutely convinced. The first time Petraeus testified, he claimed that he was sure it was a terrorist attack. That was the last time he testified. In the interim time, the FBI comes to the Department of Justice with somewhere between 20 to 30,000 of General Petraeus's personal emails. Where do you suppose they got those from? Maybe the NSA? Personal emails to Paula Broadwell regarding their affair. Nothing classified, all personal. They bring him to the administration and the Department of Justice, they open a criminal investigation, and even the FBI itself said there's really nothing criminal about this, but they were ordered to open an investigation on General Petraeus. He was due to testify again before the intelligence committees, and before he did that, he resigned from his position. What is also chilling about that is, believe it or not, the investigation on General Petraeus is still open. There was no transfer of classified information. There was no criminal act committed, and yet Eric Holder still has an open investigation on General Petraeus to this day. Is that blackmail? In my opinion, you bet it is. I think it's shut up. It's a shut up tactic to keep him quiet. And of course, the goal was to get him out of there and get John Brennan in, who would do the bidding of the administration without putting up a fuss. You still there, Don?
Oops, I'm sorry about that. I hit the wrong button, as I usually do when Joe's not around. You're listening to a very special edition of the Hagman and the Hagman Report. This is Monday, June 23rd, 2014. Very special guest, Mr. Kevin Schiff. Folks, visit Kevin Schiff's website, kevinmschiff.com. It's linked off of HomelandSecurityUS.com. I'll tell you what, one of the best books I've read from the insiders, CIA, from the companies of shadows, from the company of shadows. Grab a copy of that book. Mr. Schiff provides just a virtual encyclopedia of the internal and external U.S. intelligence and CIA operations, included for the first time in a single volume, and that being his book, Knee of Shadows. Folks, we're going to be right back. News in 2 minutes. Up next, stay with us. Back in about 4.5 minutes. Stay with us, folks.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of News in 2 Minutes, bringing you the news that you need to know every day. Let's begin. Astronomers have discovered a bright, geologically present structure or island on the second largest sea of Saturn's moon Titan. The object, researchers say, proves that dynamic geological processes are taking place on the moon, which scientists have long declared a stagnant and unchanging place. With numerous technological advancements taking place in the energy production of modern solar systems, governments around the world are said to be tightening restrictions on funding and development of new products in a desperate bid to retain control of the electrical grid. Researchers note that current technology, not yet publicly available or only available at extreme cost and complexity, are capable of generating energy that is nearly equivalent to power generation provided by gas-fired and nuclear power plants. International scientists publishing a study in the journal Nature Climate Change have shown that concentrating solar power has the potential to give citizens of the world freedom from the servitude that ties humanity to the electrical grid. However, data indicates that multiple organizations and governments are taking steps to rescind the advancements as power-hungry corporations lobby to keep billions of citizens worldwide under a declining veil of control and authority. Officials in India are continuing to report a dangerous increase in youth fatalities related to acute encephalitis, leading researchers within the country to ask the U.S. Center for Disease Control for assistance in the identification and isolation of the so far mysterious cause of the disease. Researchers report that Western statecraft is continuing to shape anti-American sentiment with powerful Middle Eastern nations as well as both China and Russia, following the secretive announcement that the U.S. has funneled over $500 million in military aid and assistance to Egypt amid a reported and perceived suspension in Western military assistance. The announcement comes as U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry visited the country, promising continued aid in Egypt's fight against anti-government operations led by the Muslim Brotherhood and the delivery of Apache helicopters to the nation's military. And to wrap things up, extreme regional heat coupled with unreliable access to electricity continues to prove deadly to citizens across India. Scientists are beginning to realize potentially disastrous changes to the jet stream and their effect on increasingly deadly weather events. Anti-government crackdowns are continuing across Asia. U.S. missile defenses are increasing amid tension with Russia with potentially devastating results. And a string of powerful earthquakes near Indonesia, followed by a 2.5 in Missouri, completes today's Quake Watch. And that's it for this episode of News in 2 Minutes. Check back tomorrow for more news that the aware need the most.
And that's News in 2 Minutes. Courtesy of Full Spectrum of Survival.com. Visit their website, FullSpectrumSurvival.com. Folks, you know, look, we know the time is running short. We do know, and we need to prepare. We need to get our houses in order. Go to AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Premier a survival website, bar none. It's Christian-owned, veteran-owned. I have witnessed I've met the owners, talked to them many times, met the owners in person, all but seen their operation, but I've seen enough of their operation to know it's a fantastic, they perform a fantastic service for all of us. In fact, the owners will spend time, if you have a certain questions about long-term food storage or whatever your question might be, they'll answer it for you. But folks, I'm pretty hot right now on a couple of things. The Trading Post, this particular package, start thinking of food as money, protein for trading, bartering, part of your preps. There, if you go to new products under Shop Survival Products, click on Trading Post and open that up and check that out. It provides you with a very rugged, durable canvas bag that can be used, passed around 100 times, 1,000 times, who knows. But it's filled with multiple servings of 20-year shelf life food that is all protein. Now, a lot of places will want you to buy starches and sugars and other things, but this is just a tremendous, tremendous bag of 273 total servings at less than 59, or about less than 60 cents, 59 cents a serving, roughly. It's yours for $159.95 to the Hagman & Hagman listeners. Also, they've got numerous other packages as well, including but not limited to the Prospector's packages as well, which has silver in there. And if you would have purchased that when we talked about it earlier, you would have actually had made quite a bit of, well, I shouldn't say quite a bit, you would have made as a percentage, quite a bit on your investment of the silver. We see silver taking a skyward leap. Now, personally, I feel it's going to come down a little bit and then go back up, and then from that point go through the roof. But having said that, what a great package. It's got the silver in there, silver, some people call it junk silver, but they're silver dimes. And there's a very good special there with that package. But all in all, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com, that's AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com.
Doug Hagman, one guy that doesn't need a bullhorn to get your attention.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a very special Monday edition of the Hagman & Hagman Report. This is Monday, June 23rd, 2014. I'm Doug Hagman. Very special guest. By the way, flying solo tonight, I want to wish my son a very happy wedding anniversary. Married 2 years. I remember when he was just a little tyke. I guess we're all getting old. But anyway, he'll be back tomorrow night with, of course, Stan Dale. And then Wednesday, we have a very special appearance. Folks, get ready for this. We had V&W on, the Financial Insider, Intelligence Insider, on last week. Well, this coming Wednesday, Steve Quayle will be joining V, talking about the baton death march of the U.S. dollar, as Kevin Shipp had alluded to. But our very special guest tonight is Kevin M. Shipp, one of the most widely experienced officers in the CIA. He occupied positions as an agent on the protective detail of the director and the deputy director of the CIA, a manager of ongoing operations, and internal security officer, a counterintelligence investigator tasked to divert moles out of the CIA. Yeah, that's a task and a half that would be, I think some movies have been made about that. Counterterrorism center officer and a protective operations team leader, and a polygraph examiner, lie detector guy. He's a man after my own heart. Kevin, welcome back. Thanks for sticking with us over the course of the hour. And I'll tell you, you know, I appreciate when my son is here. I do understand the technical aspect. Or I should say I appreciate his technical abilities. You know, as I get older, I seem to get a lot more ignorant with respect to technology. So these buttons and stuff, if I happen to fade out or wink out for a minute, it's because of operator error. I'll be right back. I'm sure it's just a button I hit, so bear with me. Kevin, before we broke for the last hour, you had mentioned Petraeus. Brennan also had to be put in not to just do the bidding of the Saudis, I suppose. I mean, to protect the Saudis, don't you think, and keep them happy that they had a team player in place? I mean, Brennan, it seems like this entire administration, in particular Brennan and Obama, are doing the bidding of the Saudis. Comments on that?
I think that's true, and you know, it helps to understand that this is pan-administration. We have been sleeping with the Saudis going back a few administrations, primarily because of our dependence on foreign oil, which most people don't realize powers our aircraft carriers and our jets, so there's a national security aspect to that. But yes, I would agree that this administration has taken our relationship with the Saudis to a whole new level, and it is my personal view that that is behind the appointment of John Brennan as a director of the CIA. It is my view that he will do things that Petraeus, being by all accounts a man of honor, would not have done.
Understood. Yeah, I'm right there with you. This goes back to the first Gulf. I mean, to even the first Gulf War, I believe. And by the way, Brennan's been around for a quarter of a century in the intelligence industry and venue world,
yep,
hasn't he?
Of course, yeah.
Okay, so this seems, and you mentioned the Manchurian candidate. I often wonder about that because I look at the hierarchy of the CIA, and I just wonder, too, if you look at Obama's background, and I don't know if that's something you want to get into. That's probably a program for another day, but, I mean, Obama's background, it's almost as if Obama was created for this very moment in time. And you had said something interesting, too, as an agent 10 years ago, being told then what's happening today, you wouldn't believe it. But, you know, would you have believed standing amid the rubble of the World Trade Center or the Pentagon or in that field in Pennsylvania that 7 years hence we would have a man in the White House by the name of Barack Hussein Obama, and tack on another 4 years, we'd have a arguably Muslim CIA director. You probably would have punched me in the mouth, wouldn't you?
I wouldn't have thought that in my wildest dreams.
And here we are.
Yeah, shocking.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the, would you classify, and I've got a page already right now, which represents about 45 emails of listener questions. This it seems like any time we have a very interesting guest, and of course you are, I get so many listener emails wanting to ask questions. So I'm going to try to fit your questions in the order I get them and in the context that they best fit. So just hang with me.
Sure.
One of the things. Oh, okay. Yeah, and this does fit in with what we're talking about. In the context of all of the things going forward today, whether it's the IRS, whether it's the veterans dying en masse, being put on waiting lists, whether you name it. Where does Benghazi fit in your level of importance or import in terms of critically changing the course of this country's direction as well as the direction of the world?
Well, I think Benghazi is at the top of the list, and not particularly because of Benghazi itself or the attacks as horrific as they were, but it is the operational goal behind Benghazi which is the most chilling. The IRS scandal is chilling in and of itself because they targeted Christian and conservative groups specifically, and now, of course, the emails are missing. We all know that's a sham. But the operational goal of Benghazi is at the top of the list because that is the support for radical Islamic jihadists that are now attacking Syria and have merged across the border, formed into ISIS, and now are threatening the government of Baghdad and the entire Middle East. So we have, at least in my view, the most alarming global security threat that we have had probably since the world wars, which could unfold at any moment. I'm surprised Israel hasn't moved yet. I know they're probably chomping at the bit. Israel has got, if I may just divert a little bit, this is
sure.
Connected. Israel is in a very, very difficult position in that their very existence is at stake, worse probably than in at least the last 20 years. And the Obama administration has become one of their chiefest opponents. Let me give you an example. I don't know if most people know this, but after Susan Rice left and was appointed as Obama's national security advisor, which makes her immune from testimony in Benghazi, by the way, when Susan Rice left, President Obama appointed Samantha Power as the new U.S. ambassador to the U.N. Samantha Power has come out publicly and said that her goal is to shift $2 billion of aid from Israel over to the Palestinians. She also has made the incredibly defiant statement that she would like to deploy U.S. forces to protect Palestinians from the Israeli IDF in Israeli territory. This is the new U.S. ambassador to the United Nations saying this about the nation of Israel, taking money away from support to them and giving it to the Palestinians. Now, I know a lot about the Palestinians. I know a lot about the PLO and Hamas, and they are bloodthirsty terrorists. And for the U.S. ambassador to come out and say this, I've been to Israel several times. There's just got to be a state of alarm in that country, and part of that alarm is caused by our own president and his appointees.
Yeah, very much so. And one of the questions I had early on, and I had a pretty lengthy discussion with one of my sources about this, Kevin, why would Israel want Assad gone to further having seen what they saw, having witnessed this big mess of the Arab Spring and the installation of Muslim Brotherhood governments and the destabilization of the governments, why would Israel want Assad gone? Wouldn't it be better to leave the devil that you know in place than to replace it with perhaps something worse?
Yeah, I think if you look at their actions or lack thereof, the last time they bombed that nuclear plant in Syria, there hasn't been much of any significance, any action on Israel's part against Syria. Now, of course, Syria has been sponsoring terrorism against Israel for years, but yeah, now they have a bitter enemy. And I think Israel has been so quiet because they backed off from Syria because they know, they see what is unfolding. It is far worse than Syria, and I think you're probably correct. They've backed off a little bit to leave Syria in place as much as they'd like to see it gone, but that's the second of the two greatest evils, I think. And so they're fastening their seatbelt, and they're just backing off because things are exploding in the Middle East. And I'm telling you, Syria is a powder keg, and it could explode the entire Middle East, and it could take us into another world war. So this thing is just hanging in the balance. You throw in the weakness of the U.S. dollar and all the rest of that, and you know, we all sit, we pay our bills, and we sit in front of our TV and we watch what's left of the news. And most Americans don't realize they're on the precipice of potentially a global calamity.
Boy, when I say that, people send nasty emails. When you say that, I'll bet you get a lot of respect. Of course, you know, people should sit up and pay attention to what is taking place on a global scale. How do you think this is going to affect us here domestically, aside from we mentioned about taking out the U.S. dollar, which I believe it's a fait accompli. But what about the direct military threat or I don't know. Would it be military threat to the United States? I mean, what would a potential – I mean, how do you see this playing out?
Well, it would be a military threat in the sense that this is a war on terror or a terrorism war against us. This thanks perhaps in part to our president, this is now the biggest threat to U.S. national security, I think, in the last 40 years. These countries are coming together over there in the Middle East, and their sole goal, two goals, one, destroy Israel, two, destroy the United States. And it is steamrolling at an alarming rate, and our president is not opposing it. At the very least, he's allowing it to happen. If this semi-Ottoman empire comes back into being, we are going to be in a war against not just terrorists here and there and Al-Qaeda and their splinter groups. We're going to be at war with an entire Middle Eastern country that is radically Islamic imposed against the United States. And if Iran ever gets the bomb, and if this president keeps it on the way he's going, they will. If Iran ever gets the bomb, we are looking at an extremely serious situation for U.S. national security, extremely serious.
Well, and isn't it interesting that prior to the last election, between the September 11th, 2012 attacks in Benghazi and the last election, isn't it interesting, do you find it interesting that Valerie Jarrett was in Qatar, or however you pronounce the name of that country, trying to work a peace deal with Iran? Any thoughts on that?
I'd say it's beyond interesting. I'd say, once again, the person instrumental in running the White House is over instituting the new ideology and strategy of this White House. She's doing basically what perhaps the president himself should be doing. I think that is, once again, it's just another piece of evidence out there that you can see regarding what this administration is up to and really who's pulling the switches.
Yeah, exactly. And I've got to go back to even, we can rehash this ad nauseum, but I just want to make sure people understand, you know, the Saudis, if you look at Obama's background, the Saudis arguably paid for his education or at least had something to do with that. The Saudis also were responsible, I believe, as the foreign element to campaign contributions when he was cash poor back in 08, if you recall that, and then he had a sudden surge via the internet contributions that were never tracked, but we know came from an outside source, outside of the country source, into mosques, into the United States, and then, of course, into the campaign. Any thoughts on that, Kevin, or any comment on that?
Well, I'll tell you, Doug, I don't think we've ever seen a president that has got as mysterious a past or concealed past as this one. He got money from mysterious sources. Of course, I don't have documentation directly what those sources were. But this guy was a community organizer, for goodness sake, which basically is somebody that goes around and knocks on doors and hands out pamphlets. And he went from a community organizer into the Senate, and then after a year and a half, the President of the United States, with money flowing, millions of dollars flowing into his personal coffers from these secret sources. His past, and again, this plays into who is this guy, And is he just a prop placed there, or there is so much missing information, and information including his college transcripts, maybe his grades are so bad, who knows, that he won't release. But there is so much about this president that has been directly concealed from the American people. This is our elected president who is supposed to be serving us, and we can't even find out his background in detail because it's being concealed. That in and of itself is alarming.
Yeah, I would think so, especially based on your coming from you, from your investigative background, your background as a CIA officer, and the types of investigations I'm sure that you were involved in, operations you were involved in, has got to give you a little bit of pause.
Yeah, it does. And the master's level degree I got when I was with the agency is in the detection of deception. So it's been a very difficult 6 years for me because I just see it all. I see deception all over the place, not in what they say, but in what they do. It just blows your mind.
Yeah, it blows mine nightly. By the way, I want to say hello to Karen listening live in Rome, Italy. God bless you, Karen, who actually has to leave her home to go to a place with a Wi-Fi connection. God bless you. Thank you for listening, Karen in Rome. Kevin, and folks, we're listening to Kevin M. Shipp from the Company of Shadows. Go to his website, kevinmshipp.com. It's linked off of our website, HomelandSecurityUS.com. Kevin, take us where you want to go right now. Wherever you want to go, there are so many subjects that we could touch on, but based on your background, your experience, everything you've been through, and you've been through the mill, by the way, your family, my goodness. Even if you want to touch on that a little bit of what you've been through, but wherever you want to go, wherever you think it's important, go ahead and take us there, and let's just branch off from where we've been talking.
Sure. I'll start at the beginning, at least for me, how I wound up here today, kind of going out and speaking on what's going on with this administration and globally. I was a CIA officer, career officer, of course, and humbly I was decorated. I had 2 meritorious unit citations, 3 executive performance awards, and a medal. And I was placed as second in command on a secret facility with my wife and children, who became gravely ill by some chemicals that had been used at this particular site. My wife and kids were bleeding out of their noses. They had open sores on the exposed areas of their skin. My wife was bedridden, lost her short-term memory, had headaches so bad we had to put her on morphine. My oldest son's immune system was so degraded that the doctor said it was like he'd been exposed to a burst of radiation. And by the way, he has just written his own book regarding Chapter 26 of mine, which he's done a very good job on, and I understand at least one movie company is looking at it. So he's come back pretty strongly. But what happened is when I raised the issue with my agency, despite the level I was at, the number of times I'd risked my life for them, they covered the entire thing up, left our family hanging, invoked the state's secrets privilege, putting a seal on the case, which basically told our family if we talked about the illnesses or the exposure to anyone, even my wife and son could go to jail. Then they blacked out all the documents, the doctor's diagnosis, the environmental tests. I did some secretly without their knowledge, and then presented them to them. Ironically, the case still hasn't been resolved, but the environmental inspector who did the secret study that I did and presented to the agency was later shot in the head, and he's now blind. And his fiance was also shot. Coincidence? Who knows? But his study was the linchpin in my case against the agency. Anyway, then they begin to go after me. They raised the interest on my car loans to the point where they're almost unaffordable. They threatened me with internal action. They tried to order me to go get blood and psychological tests, which were the key pieces of evidence in our case, were the blood tests that showed the exposure. Our house was entered at least twice, broken into, and we had trapped the house, and the traps were broken, especially on the facility. chemicals were painted on the ceiling. We were followed by a vehicle at 90 miles an hour with its lights off. When I got back to Washington, I was repeatedly threatened. My computers were monitored. They called the other contractors I worked for and told them not to have anything to do with me, and essentially tried to destroy my career, thinking that I would just go away. And this is how they do it. If you kill a man, his cause will live on. As a matter of fact, it may get stronger. Martin Luther King is a prime example. But and the CIA has turned this into an art form. If you destroy a man slowly, you destroy his finances, you destroy his credibility, you attack his reputation. If you destroy the man slowly himself, you destroy his cause. And that's what they attempted to do to me. What I did, and really, Doug, I gotta say, there's nothing special about me. It's my faith that gives me courage, and it's my faith that enabled me to stand up against them through all this. So I wrote from the company of shadows. I battled them for 2 years to get that thing out, back and forth, quoting executive orders and Freedom of Information Act requests, laws that forbid the CIA from blacking out unclassified information, which they did. And they still blacked out the entire chapter talking about our family's exposure. That's chapter 26. So before I get to where I am today, in chapter 26 are the results of the doctor's diagnosis of my family and my family's serious illnesses. What I did was I built a code into the book about chapter 26. No one knew about it except me and my wife. And I built the code in as a legacy to my kids regarding what they suffered. So if I was ever gone, I had a person back here to release the code. And you guys, I think, were the first that I shared the code with back in our last discussion. Yeah. I put the code in there so that it would come out what was done to them if something happened to me. But with my son, who is still fighting with some of the physical results of this, kind of pleading with me, I went ahead and released the code, which is out on the website now. It's stamped on the inside cover of the book, and it basically reveals what is in Chapter 26, the illness of our family and how they covered it up. So I decided, I saw the belly of the beast, the dark side of our government that does unconstitutional things in the guise of national security, using or abusing secrecy. So I came out and decided I was going to fight it, and that's when I began my constitutional crisis series, and I began standing up against what this president is doing and the NSA, the CIA and its rendition program, and on and on and on and on, and that brought me to where I am today. So they trained me in how to do this, and so now I'm out basically exposing what they're doing, and what they're doing is undermining our Constitution. And Doug, the most alarming thing is the target, if you boil all this down, all the way down to the IRS scandals, the target is the Constitution, but not just the Constitution. The target is its foundation, and that is the Christian principles that the Constitution sits on and that the Founding Fathers, all of them, devoutly believed in. That is what is under attack by this administration, as I demonstrated at the beginning of our talk. So the President of the United States, the administration, and his heads of agencies are now basically have Christianity in their crosshairs, because you cannot destroy the Constitution unless you destroy its foundation, and that's the Christian principles that were behind its writing. And that is the chief connection. I suppose that is probably my mission, humbly, for what days I have left here, is to bring that to light, and I do that in some of my seminars, that the target is Christianity itself, because that's where the Constitution comes from. I'm kind of hanging out there, flapping in the wind. I understand that DNI, Director of National Intelligence Clapper, and CIA Director John Brennan have just issued directives forbidding any agency officer from having contact with members of the press, even if it's unclassified, and they're asking agency officers to spy on each other internally and report each other if they think that they're talking to members of the press. This all came out after From the Company of Shadows was published, so for them, it's too late, and I think that based on some folks that I've talked to, these directives may have come out as a result of the book, and I appeared on the American Heroes channel on CIA Declassified series also, not revealing anything classified or any national security information, but exposing the unconstitutional activities of the CIA, the NSA, and this administration. So it's become my humble mission to expose the destruction of our Constitution, the destruction of the fabric of this country and of American families coming down from the top of the White House and our government itself. And I suppose that's why I'm sitting here today.
Very interesting. And you said a mouthful, many things, actually. And folks, I hope you really listened to what Mr. Shipp had and his family had to endure from the wretched illnesses. I mean, some debilitating illnesses that continue through today. By the way, Chapter 26, well, the entire book from the Company of Shadows is a fantastic read. I found it very interesting. In fact, let me just make sure I'm saying this correctly here. I think Chapter 26, Tyranny, the Story of an American Family, I haven't compared it to the others but exactly, but I think it was one of the most heavily blacked out chapters of the book.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, censored, I should say.
And the CIA, and this is almost humorous, after the book was published, the director of the CIA issued another directive stating that no one can any longer discuss the actions or the mission of the CIA in public, that is now forbidden, and the CIA will not allow anybody to publish that information anymore. Well, of course, I get into how the CIA functions, how they recruit assets, and the CIA, after a long battle, approved all of that. So after all of that was out in the book, now they're stopping anyone from talking about what the CIA does at all. Now, remember that the CIA is supposed to work for us, the American people. Our tax dollars go to fund the CIA's budget, but the CIA's budget is secret, so none of us can know what they're using our money for. Well, now we know what they're using our money for. They're running guns up into Islamic jihadists in Syria with our money. So they have stepped completely outside the Constitution, which I personally adore. It's the greatest governmental document ever written in the history of mankind, and they're thumbing their nose at it and stepping all over it. And that really is what motivates me to get out there as in the days I have left and just trumpet what is going on. And we are losing our freedoms. We really are in a post-constitutional government right now. And if we don't do something, we're going to lose it in the not-too-distant future.
I totally agree with you on that. And the Constitution, a lot of people, I mean, our rights are given to us by God, and of course delineated by the Constitution.
Right.
A lot of people, you know, they're in it, it's, you can't separate the two, and
right.
as much as people want to do that. Now, I've got a couple of people with questions, Beth from Maine and Bill H. I don't know where you're from, Bill, but I'm going to kind of toss your questions in here because this is contextually on the same page of what you're talking about here. Beth from Maine wants to know if the administration, the presidential administration, or any part of the executive branch has direct influence, authority, use, beyond oversight, I suppose direction for the CIA. Is that where the direction comes from for the CIA, from the executive branch?
Yes, the CIA rests in the executive branch, and the director of the CIA reports directly and only to the President of the United States, and the CIA does directly the President's bidding as part of the executive branch.
Okay. And now, kind of as a another part of that question is, having said that, the convenience of, and this gets into Bill's question, Obama, the man that we know that he was even before the 2008 election, if we the people, or at least an awake select members of the American people knew that Obama had some issues, whether it was with respect to his constitutional eligibility or his background, then we must assume that other people in power at that time knew. Why didn't anyone speak up at that time that were in power, whether addressing either his constitutional eligibility or his background, or, I mean, made more of an issue about it than they did? It just goes to the statement that it's a captured operation.
Yeah, having come from the executive branch, there is an entire system set up. When the president comes in, of course, he's briefed by all the intelligence community representatives. That system is set up. It is so powerful, and this is happening right now. Anybody that questions the president of the United States is summarily fired, and their career is destroyed or worse. So when the president comes into office, it's pretty clear that you don't cross him like some generals have done and have lost their entire careers. You remember General McChrystal, who was brought back and fired because of a conversation he didn't participate in, but was just happened to be present, and the president brought him back and relieved him of his duty to make it clear you do not mess with this president, whether you agree with him or not. There's a power structure in Washington. We used to call it Potomac fever. It's a sickness. And I have to admit, my first 5 years in the CIA, when they tell you you're the best and the brightest and the 2% and on and on and on and on, you know, if you're not careful, if you don't have a moral center, you start believing it. Well, these people do. And it's a narcissistic state of mind, kind of a mental sickness. But when you get in there, it's made clear this is happening in the Department of State right now. You do not mess with the president, the secretary, the vice president, or anybody in charge. If you do, you will be destroyed. And, of course, they make some examples of that. So then you add something which is just as disturbing, and that is the participation of the Congress and the Senate. Probably the most disconcerting thing for me was to find out how corrupt the Congress was and the Senate, because I thought they were our last hope. But it turns out there's an entire world of extortional money flow that goes on in Washington, even in the Republican and Democratic parties, where votes are bought, companies are bribed, legislation is crafted with no intention of it being passed, just to threaten industry so that they'll contribute billions to the Republican and Democratic parties. Most people don't know this, but to get a seat on the powerful House Ways and Means Committee, you don't get – here's an example of extortion. You don't get on that committee based on experience. You have to pay about $600,000 to whatever in this case, the Republican Party. You have to pay $600,000 to get that seat, and the reason they give it to you is so you can raise more money for that campaign. So it's a system of extortion that flows through Washington. A chief example of that regarding Benghazi is the fact that John Boehner refused to come out and appoint a select committee to investigate Benghazi from the very beginning. Not only did he oppose it, he threatened other congressmen that if they opposed it, their careers would be in jeopardy. So no select committee was appointed. Congressman Frank Wolf, who came and spoke at our first Citizens Commission meeting, proposed H.R. 36 to open up a special investigation into Benghazi. John Boehner opposed that. He opposed it all the way up until these emails were released from the White House, until he was forced to agree to do it. John Boehner does what's called the toll gate legislation, where he will get up and he will intentionally delay legislation as kind of an unwritten threat to industries for them to pump more money in before he'll bring it to the floor for a vote. That's documented. He does it. In any event, the point is that the entire system there has become so corrupt and immoral that it just feeds on itself. And even the Republican Party now is not standing up against this president and what he's doing, because the whole system is just rife with corruption.
Interesting. Okay. Is this why Boehner, by the way? I mean, is this the only reason why Boehner is reticent about any type of investigation? Or at that level, could Boehner and others have been read into the real goings-on in Benghazi and said, hey, no problem, let's rock and roll? Or is that possible?
Yeah, in my view, knowing the system and how the intelligence committees work and the Gang of Eight, and certain congressmen and senators are only a few are given top-secret code word clearances to have access to these programs. In my view, and I think it's pretty clear that John Boehner was read into the Benghazi operational program signed the non-disclosure agreement, probably at the compartmented level, was witting and approving of what was going on. In my view, that is the reason why he has been standing against the select committees this entire time, because he has what we used to call, in detection of deception, guilty knowledge. He knows exactly what the operation was in Benghazi, and for it to come to light in its fullness, I think would reveal the fact that he was witting of the operation when it first started.
Yeah, I've heard that phrase, guilty knowledge, a number of times on the in the intelligence world, and it's just astounding to me, definitely. Dina from Dayton wants to know, based on your knowledge, listening live, hi Dina, wants to know, how many investigations have been conducted, official investigations into Benghazi have been conducted? Personally, I've heard as few as 8 and as many as 12. What's the actual number, if you know?
I think the number is closer to 8, and every single one of them has just gotten a sliver of the pie. And once again, when these committees hold their hearings, with a few exceptions, they're mostly used as a stage for that congressman or senator to kind of pontificate, and then they ask a couple of pretty bland questions, and no real investigation goes forth. And that's why we're in the place we're in. There has been no direct investigation with subpoena power. So I have tremendous respect for Congressman Issa. I think he's trying to do the best job he can. And now that Trey Gowdy is in there heading up the Select Committee on Benghazi, I think they're probably, some of them are quaking in their boots because he's a bulldog, and I really like that guy. But all of these investigations, and there's been somewhere around 8, have not gotten to the truth yet because of the way that they're set up. And the questions that are asked, they really don't have to answer them because there is no subpoena power, and the congressmen don't really ask the questions that go right to the bone. And that's why Congressman Wolf proposed H.R. 36, so that there would be a select committee and they would have subpoena power and witnesses could testify without retribution. And that hasn't happened until Trey Gowdy is beginning right now. So the previous investigations were... They were attempts at best to get as far as they could, but they just weren't able to get anywhere because of the way the system is set up.
Okay, and this kind of dovetails with Dina's question as well. Do you believe, rather than read this, has a deck been stacked? Apparently, with the new investigation that is going to be conducted, there's a segment of it's bipartisan. I mean it's a partisan deal here. You've got Democrats and Republicans, and there's certain Democrats, certain Republicans in there. There are also, to my knowledge, rules that have to be followed or guidelines that have to be followed with respect to this or limitations, perhaps might even be a better word, with any type of investigation or questioning. Is that the case? And if so, what's the deal on that?
Well, yes, it is. There are rules that different parties force to be enacted to keep the microscope off members of their particular party. And let me just say, I'm an independent. I'm not a Democrat. I was a Republican for about 20 years. Now I'm an independent. But the way things that are set up on Capitol Hill, there are rules in place to protect members of the Congress and the Senate and members of the administration if things get really nasty. So, yes, there's boundaries and places where they can't go. And also, it's important to understand that the CIA operation in Benghazi was a compartmented operation. And so... all of the folks, and having worked in that environment, all of the folks on the ground in Benghazi were only read into certain slivers or compartments of the operation. No one was given the full picture except the Secretary of State, the President, Valerie Jarrett, and others, those at the highest levels. Those that were down on the ground had compartmented clearances. They weren't allowed to know the entire operation. They just knew that little sliver. So when the select committee brings them in to testify, even with immunity, they only know a small piece of the pie, and they can't give them the big picture. The only people that can give them the big picture were the high-level officials involved, Secretary Clinton, Obama, Valerie Jarrett, and others. So that's those are the challenges that Trey Gowdy and the committee are facing right now.
Okay, and that's kind of what I thought, too. Talk to us about Abu Qatala. Of course, he's the Ahmed Abu Qatala. He was taken into custody now in some secret U.S. military installation, but he was taken into custody by this raid on apparently his home on June 15th. Now, he's accused, by the way, of leading the attack that led to the death of four people in Benghazi. An indictment was sworn out against him in July, I believe it was July 15th of 2013. Here we are, June 15th, 2014. He's picked up. In the meantime, Qatala's out there having tea with the Times of London's Anthony Lloyd. He's having strawberry frappes or fraps or whatever you, however you pronounce that, with New York Times' David Kirkpatrick, and mango juice with Elizabeth Palmer from CBS News. Certainly not believing that he was going to be picked up by this indictment, this three-count indictment against him. I mean, what's this all about?
Yeah, he was interviewed by five news media outlets, and he was out there in full view for 2 years. I understand he even flipped off a drone as it flew overhead. So he was there the entire time. There is evidence that he had been paid by the U.S. government in the past. And isn't it a coincidence that when things are going completely awry in Iraq and Iraq is falling apart, all of a sudden they arrest Qatala after 2 years of him just sitting there twiddling his thumbs. They trot him out as this big victory, this secret operation in the middle of the night. When this guy was sitting out at cafes drinking coffee, they could have got him any time they wanted. So something just smells like burnt muffins here to me. I think it's pretty obvious that this is kind of a sham. Well, it'll be interesting to watch his trial, very interesting, and see what comes out if they allow it to be televised. But there's the coincidence here is just beyond ridiculous. So I think there's more to Qatala than him just being the ringleader of the attacks that evening. I think there's more to Qatala and his connections to the Libyan government and even the U.S., I think, that may not come to light. It may. It depends on Gowdy and company, but this is going to go through the U.S. legal system and the Department of Justice, which is now run by none other than Eric Holder, a main campaign contributor of Barack Obama. So, again, something just smells about this to me. The timing, the fact that they could have arrested him easily any time. They did it to distract people from what's happening with ISIS in Iraq, who we armed. I think it's just a there's a smokescreen element to it, in my opinion.
I totally agree with you on that. And you had taken the words right out of my mouth. My question is, at the time, Benghazi and before, whose payroll was he really on, especially at the time the attack occurred? And if he's off the payroll now, how long has he been off? I think these are two questions that need to be answered. He was reported to be the head of Ansar al-Sharia in the Benghazi area, and we know that there were training camps in that area. And if that's the case, then one can reasonably connect the training camp, the oversight and operation of the training camps, with Mr. Qatala. So there's got to be some level of involvement, cooperation, or assistance from and with him with the training, and even the movement of the weapons, one would think, based on his position with Ansar al-Sharia. So that's my question. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think you're exactly right.
Okay. Obviously, numerous reports from multiple Western sources, including Western and NATO contractors, Russian sources, that many, in fact, the majority of FSA fighters initially sent into Syria right around the time of Benghazi were trained at these training camps. The training camps are run by according to the information I have, and tell me if this is consistent with your information. These training camps were run by both by Saudi NATO forces as well as the Nation of Qatar and others.
Yeah, that's consistent with what I know, yes.
Okay, and then they were sent to Turkey and other locations. All right. All right. And folks, all of this information is really, I think it's critical to hear it from a man like Mr. Shipp, who's got the credentials, who's got the inside information, who's got the insider information, who's got the background, the contacts, in the position to know. It's interesting, too, that and you can speak to the operation. Perhaps you can speak to the operation, Mr. Shipp, about this. He was a contractor. Catala was a contractor, building houses and structures and what have you. After he got out of jail, after he was let out of jail by Gaddafi, Syed Gaddafi, is that pretty? The contractor's position, is that a kind of a position consistent with an asset of the CIA, perhaps?
Well, they're going to look for someone that has a network, a warm network. With a lot. Now, you have to remember, too, that in Islam, specifically with Anshar al-Sharia and other groups, really all the groups, they're like family. And the reason the CIA was so lacking in intelligence before 9/11 was they weren't or didn't have the capability or didn't develop the capability to break into these Islamic families. So if you're going to go in and recruit someone to be an asset and funnel information back to you, you're going to look for someone who's networked and tied into the family. And again, I'm just conjecturing here at this point. But if he's building houses and he's tied in throughout Tripoli and Benghazi and Libya, it doesn't matter that he's just a home builder. What matters is that he can get into the family and he can hear the family's discussions and he can attend their events and talk to them and with some level of trust. So that's the person you're after. And I strongly suspect that's the kind of person he was and the kind of connections that he had, which made him very valuable.
Gotcha. All right. Very simple question from Beth out of New Hampshire. Beth, thanks for listening. Given the arrangement of the investigative team now that's going to investigate Benghazi, number one, do we have enough time? And number two, do you think anything will become of it? Or do you think that this will be just another neutered investigation?
Well, I tell you, I have tremendous respect for Trey Gowdy as an honest prosecutor and a man of character. They couldn't have picked a better guy. He's a bulldog. He's going to go after what he can. But you know, I hate to sound a bit sarcastic on this, but I don't think they're going to get anywhere. The system in Washington is set up to block this very thing. And I think he'll gain a little ground, but in my humble opinion, he'll never get to the big picture. The way the CIA operates and the way that it compartments information and the way that it hides information, even from Congress, the way that it classifies things so that people can't release them without going to prison, the way that its system is set up, it is a nut that is almost impossible to crack. And so you got Mr. Gowdy going in to try to crack that, he and his staff, to crack a system that is so manufactured for the last 40 years. It has worked over and over. There's been investigation after investigation regarding the CIA's operation, and it's still operating. As a matter of fact, it's bigger than ever. So can Trey Gowdy and company crack that system? I hate to say it, but I don't think so. They may get a few facts here and there, but I think this will run on for a couple of years, which is a strategy for some. And then it will, I hate to say it, but it will fizzle out. I wish to God, hope to God I'm wrong, that they're able to get this stuff out. But I know how the system operates, and it is extremely difficult.
Wow. Okay. And that's a very sobering message. But folks, we're talking to our very special guest tonight, Mr. Kevin Shipp, a former CIA officer. and anti-terrorism expert, counter-terrorism expert. He's held several high-level positions in the CIA. His book, this is a must-read, folks, definitely. In fact, I found it very engaging and at some points humorous, and you'll find yourself kind of chuckling and tearing up, and your emotions will be tried in this book from the Company of Shadows. It's really a great insight, too, into CIA operations, internal operations, and kind of an inside look of what really goes on. So I highly recommend From the Company of Shadows. Again, our very special guest, Mr. Kevin Shipp. His website, kevinmshipp.com. Go to our website, homelandsecurityus.com, and click on the link to his website. Order his book. Folks, we're going to be back. Mr. Shipp, we're going to be back, too, here in about 4.5 minutes after the top of the hour. You're listening to a very special edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We'll be right back after this. Stay with us.
Hi, folks. Doug Hagman here. You might know me as the co-host from the Hagman and Hagman Report, or as a frequent guest on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. If you're like me, you're tired and confused over today's headlines. You just don't know where to turn for accurate, concise information about really what's going on, what's truly going on in today's society. If you don't know where to turn for accurate, well-researched, and properly vetted news, I've got a suggestion. In fact, it's a requirement. Bookmark Canada Free Press. That's CanadaFreePress.com on the internet. It's just not for Canada. It's for news across the world. Judy McLeod, founding editor, has put together a vast array of talented writers like Kelly O'Connell, Daniel Greenfield, Dr. Ilana Johnson-Powell, a lot of guest columnists, very talented writers. Folks, that's Canada Free Press at CanadaFreePress.com. Now mobile friendly. Follow on Facebook, because without America, there is no free world.
It's hard to imagine when things are going reasonably well, just how quickly things can change. But what would it take? Economic collapse? Massive crop failure? Chemical or biological attack? So many situations could find you in the grocery looking to pick up food for your family only to find that the shelves are empty. There's nothing. Don't let that happen. Act today to make sure that if it ever comes to that, you and your family will be provided for. Visit freezedryguy.com to look at the wide variety of survival foods available. Freeze-dried foods from the Freeze Dry Guy store longer, rehydrate faster, are nutritionally superior to, and taste better than any other long-term storage food available. Visit freezedryguy.com or call toll-free 866-404-3663. FreezeDryGuy.com.
How much are you worth?
I've no idea. How much do you want?
I just want to know what you're worth. Over 10 million?
Oh, my, yes.
Why are you doing it? How much better can you eat? What can you buy that you can't already afford?
The future, Mr. Gitz. The future.
5 minutes. This is unbelievable. The apology that ought to be given is to the American taxpayer, not to a government agency that is abusing its power. I am sitting here listening to this testimony. I don't believe it. That's your problem. Nobody believes you.
Come on.
The Internal Revenue Service comes to Congress a couple years ago and misleads us and says no targeting is occurring. Then it said it was a few rogue agents in Cincinnati. Then it said it was also on progressives. All of those things have been proven untrue. This committee sent a criminal referral of possible criminal wrongdoing just a month ago to the Justice Department. We've heard nothing. You bury in a 27-page letter to the Senate asking for them to conclude the investigation that you've lost Lois Lerner's emails during the time in question because of a hard drive crash. Monday, our investigators ask your agency whether any other hard drives crashed, and we learned that 6 other hard drives of the people we're investigating were involved. You didn't tell us that.
We told you on Monday.
On Monday.
And what did you do with the
information? Because we asked you.
Right, and what did you do with that information?
You told us on Monday because we asked you whether any other hard drives crashed. This is unbelievable.
We answered
You told
question.
Us on May that you were going to give us all of Lois Lerner's emails, and you learned in February that this crashed.
I did not learn in February it was a crash, and told you on Monday.
I'm not asking you a question. I'm just making
a
statement.
My apologies.
You are the Internal Revenue Service. You can reach into the lives of hardworking taxpayers, and with a phone call, an email, or a letter, you can turn their lives upside down. You ask taxpayers to hang on to 7 years of their personal tax information in case they're ever audited, and you can't keep 6 months' worth of employee emails? And now that we are seeing this investigation, you don't have the emails. Hard drives crashed. You learned.
Doug Hagman, one guy that doesn't need a bullhorn to get your attention.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
And this is Doug Hagman flying solo tonight. My son, my co-host Joe Hagman, is celebrating his anniversary this evening and just making his way back into town. I want to wish him a happy anniversary. Our very special guest tonight, Mr. Kevin Shep, author from The Company of Shadows. Folks, definitely got to be put on your summer reading list. If you don't already have a copy, go to Kevin Shep's website, kevinmshep.com. It's accessible via HomelandSecurityUS.com, and there order the book. It's a riveting read, it really is, and I highly recommend it. But he's also a member of the Citizens Commission on Benghazi, has got a lot of information about the current events that are associated with Benghazi. He understands the bigger picture here. And Kevin, I want to welcome you back to our show, and I want to thank you so very much for spending your evening with us.
Thanks for having me, Doug.
I'll tell you, it's an honor to have you. You know, I do consider it an honor. You've really given a lot for this nation at the sacrifice of your family. And I mean, really, it's a sacrifice you've made. And reading your book and knowing your testimony, knowing your account, better men would have, most men would have folded. Under the harassment in which you endured. And I've got to tell you that I don't know how I would have handled that when you were under the harassment of the CIA or rogue elements of the government, I should say. I don't know. I mean, being chased at 90 miles an hour, having your home broken into, my goodness. But your faith carried you. So that's...
That's right. Yeah, you know, as I said earlier, there's nothing special about me. It was my faith that gave me the courage to stand against them in all of this. And really, that's what powered me on. And I think that's the main thing they miscalculated was my faith. I think they didn't figure that in to their plan, and it kind of backfired on them.
Well, yeah, I can understand that. Do you find maybe this is a loaded? I don't know if this is a proper question or not, but are members, the CIA agents, officers? Are most moral men and women with solid faith, or are they? I mean, is that your findings? Most are well intentioned. They're men and women of integrity, high moral character. And,
well, I can tell you this: faith inside the CIA is very rare. Narcissism and arrogance is quite common. When you get in there, your head swells bigger than your hat size. And as I mentioned earlier, if you don't have a moral ground or center, you're gonna become pretty much of a narcissist. The culture inside the CIA is one of icy daggers, and many of us took dangerous assignments overseas just to get away from headquarters and all the backstabbing. Christianity has been drummed out of the CIA as far back as, let's see, 1995. Our division chief, who was a good man, brought us in to the conference room and said he had an order that came down from the director that we all had to follow. He had to brief us on. And what he told us all was we have been ordered that no one in agency offices can display a manger scene any longer, and you cannot say Merry Christmas in any CIA building or office space. Everybody in the room, except for maybe two of us, just accepted that, whatever. A couple of us were like, what did you just say? So that was as far back as 1995, when really the faith vacuum started. There used to be a lot of really good people of faith in the agency, but they dwindled out. Anyway, I went home that evening after they gave us that order, and I thought about that. And I thought about our Constitution and what it was based on, and I thought about freedom of speech outside of classified circles, and I thought about being able to say Merry Christmas in this country, any place that you wanted, which is the way a free society used to be, and I decided that was my line in the sand. So I went in the next day. It was Christmas Eve, and I was leaving about 4 o'clock, and I turned around to my coworkers and I said, hey, good night, everyone, and by the way, Merry Christmas. And they all kind of smiled like, yeah, man, go get them. And I walked out and basically go ahead, make my day. And as always happens when there's bullies in government, they come out kind of like the Wizard of Oz, looking big and ugly and scary. But a bunch of agency officers rose up and said, that's ridiculous. We're not going to abide by that. You're not going to affect our freedom of speech. And there was an uproar that started from that. And, of course, the big Wizard of Oz backed down, and bullies turned into cowards, and they shut up and they just let it go. But that was the attack on faith in the CIA back in 1995 for those of us, the few of us in there that had faith. But the CIA, there's some very good people in there. When you get up in the management levels, you find some very narcissistic people that will do anything to maintain their careers. That's not the way the CIA used to be back in the days when it emerged out of OSS. It was a group, and I know some of these, one in particular who's still with us. It was a group of people who were, their dedication was to God and country. Well, that ended pretty much at the beginning of the Clinton administration is when I saw it start to degrade. That ended, and now it's just career posturing and demographic changes and people clamoring for career advancement. And most of the supervisors, two in particular, who were really men of honor, they left and retired because they couldn't take it anymore. So it's not the same CIA it was in the beginning. Now it's morale is at an all-time low, a lot of the folks I traveled with, and, you know, the old James Bond pictures, when I went out in the field and we worked kind of on the human intelligence side of things, some of the folks I worked with were just a little higher than a snake, you know, in terms of their morals and what they would do outside of the view of anyone else. So the James Bond image kind of doesn't play out on the field like it does in the movies. So, no, the CIA is not typically a moral place, and that pretty much exists at virtually every level.
Oh, wow. Okay. Appreciate that. Well, Brock M. wants to know, and this is a question that perhaps we should have asked at the beginning, what year did you join the CIA, and how long were you with the CIA, the agency?
I joined the CIA in 1985. And I left the CIA to fight our family's case in March of 2002.
Okay, so you were at the agency during 9/11 and
yes.
The whole okay. Do you have any? This was a question raised by a couple of people. Well, actually, more than a couple, probably a half a dozen people by email to me, wanting to know if you have any reservations about the events of 9/11. Now, I know we can get out into certain really far out into the weeds here. And I don't necessarily want to do that, but do you believe that, I mean, you had 15 of the 19 hijackers were reportedly Saudis, you know, our friends, and of course 28 pages of classified information never released. What kind of reservations do you have about the events of 9/11, if you have any?
Well, as an analyst, coming from the point of view of an analyst, a couple of things. The CIA still has not released its activities pre-9/11, not even to Congress. They refuse. They say they're too classified. But the worst part of it to me was, and again, I'm just going by the facts. There's a lot of theories out there. The worst part of it for me was the report from the 9/11 Commission. If you read that document, there are holes and errors in that document that even a high school student wouldn't have made. And let me give you one of the most glaring ones, which you would think would be ridiculous, but they put it in there as evidence anyway. They claim that the reason they can prove one of the alleged attackers was on the plane that hit the building, the reason they could prove that was because they found his passport in the rubble of the Trade Center towers. Now think about it. You have a paper passport on the body of a person on the plane. The plane hits the building, explodes into fireball, incinerates three floors above, three floors below, bends steel, eliminates any fragment, melts every fragment of the metal of the plane. The buildings collapse and come down in an incredibly huge rubble, and yet they find the paper passport of one of the hijackers to prove he was on the plane. That is beyond ridiculous. And there's other holes in the 9/11. I would encourage people to go out. There's a book out there. I can't remember the title off the top of my head. I would encourage people to go out and read an examination of the 9/11 Commission report. Just read it, because that report and some of the errors borders on ridiculous.
I agree. I mean, there are so many questions regarding that whole incident. And isn't it funny, or do you find it interesting, the timing of 9/11? 2001, and how where we find ourselves today. I mean, the progression of events since 9/11 and how that really expedited the what we're witnessing here, the erosion, rapid erosion of our rights, our liberties, the constitutional, the excising of our constitutional rights. I mean,
yes.
My goodness. So, I mean, how this all fits into perhaps a larger picture of which, you know, we're only perhaps partially aware. Kevin, this is a good question here from Jason wanting to know, and in fact, I should probably be asking this question. What do we in the alternative media, what can we possibly do that we're not doing, or what should we be doing more of to advance the truth? Many people are hungry for the truth. They deliberately listen to this program, among others. What are we missing, or what should we be focusing on, topic-wise or agenda-wise? What do we need to do?
Well, I can tell you, Doug, with the mainstream media, freedom of the press is gone. The press is so manipulated now that you cannot get the facts any longer from the press at large. Your program and programs like yours, the alternative press, really is the only freedom of the press we have left, and I mean that. It is all we have left to get really the truth out there. And what I would do is work with you and your audience and your sponsors to expand your listening audience as far as you can get it, network with other members of the alternative, quote-unquote, alternative media, because you are the only venue of truth left to get information to people, and there are people that will not listen because you're not part of the mainstream media, and that's the challenge to get over there. That's one of the reasons I like to come on your program, because I want to help where I can to get over that hump so that people will listen to what you're saying, because you all and programs like you are all we have left, because freedom of the press, as I said, is gone. So you keep doing what you're doing, do it harder. Do it with more vigor and more courage. Get your audience together, and of course, don't fear their attacks on your reputation. Don't fear any their threats. That's what they do. keep doing what you're doing. It's courageous, it's heroic, and really it's the only press that we have left.
Oh, okay. And thank you. And that's what we try to do as well. We try to expand our listener base, but we also try to work hand-in-hand with other talk show hosts and folks. More on that later in the week. But it's interesting because, as you said that, I received an email about Hillary Clinton reportedly saying that talking about, she attacked Rudge and the Second Amendment in a Texas visit, but suggested, of course, that the alternative media must be reined in. And I don't know whether you heard about this. This is just this just came out today, apparently, from a visit in Texas. It looks like with her book signing. Have you heard about that, where they're attempting to, or she's suggesting that if you're not a member of the mainstream media, that the rules for the alternative media.
There's no question about it. She is part of and speaking the same line as the entire progressive movement. You remember the FAIR doctrine, and they just tried to get into the FCC and what they wanted to do, and they got caught with their hand in the cookie jar. What the administration wanted to do was put monitors, quote unquote, in news agencies and alternative news agencies to make sure that what they were reporting were fair. That is literally true. Hillary Clinton is part of that progressive movement because the threat to progressivism, which is a global strategy, is what? Conservative Christian talk shows and constitutional discussions. And they know that's the only thing that stands in the way of their progressive goal of a global world village or whatever they want to call it. So, yeah, she is, and the progressives are, and they have been, and they will continue to attack alternative media because it's the biggest threat to their goal.
Exactly. I with you 100%. How many assets of this CIA or perhaps other government agencies are involved in discrediting sources or programs like ours, other alternative sites?
Well, if you think about Department of Homeland Security, which is connected to the CIA, which has its own intelligence unit, when you think about the fact that the Department of Homeland Security and the USA Patriot Act has branded pro-lifers, preppers, NRA members, and others as falling into the category of terrorists, by labeling those groups as such, they are now under the scrutiny of the CIA, the Department of Homeland Security, and the FBI. So, for example, every fusion center in every state of the United States right now has members of the intelligence community representatives operating in it. That means there's a CIA officer sitting in the fusion center in your city. The CIA's charter originally mandated that they were only to gather information or intelligence on foreign entities, not domestic ones. Well, that's changed. Now they're gathering information on domestic ones. That's just part of a huge, I call it the secret government. I've got a lecture on that. Part of the secret government that is operating inside the United States now against American citizens. And we all know NSA is part of that, and it goes even beyond that. So they are collecting intelligence, and they are gathering information now on U.S. citizens. As I mentioned, we're in a constitutional crisis. That never should have happened in the first place.
Very good. Now, Betty has written me, and folks, before I ask this question, Kevin, are you up for taking a couple of phone calls from
people? Yeah, I'd be glad.
Okay, good. All right. Betty wants to know about your thoughts on the attack on the Second Amendment, specifically the gun rights of American citizens. Do you think that this is going to be done via executive order, she asks, or do you think that there will be some perhaps legislation passed that will curtail our rights to own weapons?
Well, I think, and it's a very good question, I think there is a danger of an executive order that would follow some sort of unrest within the United States under the guise of protecting the citizenry. There's no question in my mind that this president would do that. You can count on the fact that the progressive movement the left, whatever you want to call them, has every intention of banning firearms in this country, and the Department of Homeland Security has every intention of eliminating firearms in this country. Those of us that know the Constitution and know history know that the only societies that have survived against tyranny have been the ones where the citizens own guns. The best example is Switzerland. When Nazi Germany, we have a person that speaks with us who was there, actually she's about 88 years old now, wonderful lady, was in Nazi Germany during this time, told us that Hitler started most of his regime change by issuing executive orders. In other words, he had a pen, and that's how he started, was by doing that. The first thing they did was take the firearms away from the citizens. But the only country that wouldn't give up its firearms was Switzerland. And the only country that Adolf Hitler did not touch when he was moving across in his global conquest, the only country he wouldn't touch was Switzerland, because everybody in Switzerland was armed. You can't stress enough how important the Second Amendment is. And you have to understand that it is the single biggest threat to this global government that they'd like to see come to pass, just like the president said in his speech. They cling to their guns and their religion. The Second Amendment is critical to the freedom of this country. And contrary to what they say in their interviews, if you read the statements of the founding fathers, they made it clear that they were talking about firearms in the hands of citizens, not an army, not just a militia, but in the hands of American citizens themselves. Their quotes are there. You can go out and Google them. But the Second Amendment is under assault. They want to change it. They want to amend the Constitution to get rid of it. It is the only defense of freedom, and that you can be sure they're going to try to pass legislation to change that and to eliminate gun ownership. They're doing that in some states as we speak right now. If there's enough unrest in the United States, intentional or unintentional, then that unrest in the United States would be cause for an executive order and the removal of firearms. So, yeah, it's a very serious matter, and that's in jeopardy.
Well, let me ask you then, man to man, this question is from me, no one else. Would you give up if the right to own a weapon was suddenly taken away from all of us as Americans tomorrow? And this is presuming, and I'm not going to ask, but this is presuming you own a weapon, I own a weapon, or more than one, we'll say. Would you comply with such a mandate, such an order?
You know, based on the Constitution that I serve and have sworn an oath to, absolutely not. I'd hand them a rotten cucumber before I'd hand them my guns. No, never, because I know what that means to freedom, so no, I would not.
Okay, all right. And this also comes from me as a question. Do you think the majority of the American people would feel the same way? The reason I ask this is because I was in the opening of a store, brand-new store, Field & Stream. I don't know if you have those where you're at, or if our listeners have those. It's apparently it's... it's a hunting, fishing, survival store. That place was just busy, and the ammunition was stacked from floor to ceiling. I mean, this, of course, was a grand opening, so they had plentiful ammunition. It was expensive, but nonetheless, it was plentiful. I just looked around, and I was looking around at the people. The busiest part of that store seemed to be the gun department, and the ammunition, guns, and the second busiest was the survival area, that the camping and that type of thing, that where they have the stuff to purify water, the camping stoves and that kind of thing. That kind of told me that at least we've got a segment of the population that's paying attention.
Yes, without a doubt. You know, the one thing that's wonderful about the American people, at least the ones left over that still believe in the Constitution and aren't fully dependent on the government for their livelihood, America's full of wonderful people that still have a lot of courage. And if they're messed with enough, whoever does it is going to regret it. So there's some hope there. I've traveled and spoken through Georgia quite a bit, and I've pastors, secretaries, lawyers, doctors, you name it. They're all supporters of the Second Amendment. So people are out there everywhere across this country that understand how important that right is and how important it is to keep that right. And I have been told by an insider in the government that ammunition will eventually be the new currency in the United States, and you can kind of see that happening now. People will be bartering ammunition instead of gold coins eventually. And it's extremely important. It's heartening when I go out and give my talks to see the people come up that are still kind of the backbone and bread and butter of America. And it's kind of what keeps my wife and I going when we see so many people out there, and there's thousands and thousands of them that still love this country and the Constitution and believe in that Second Amendment right and others.
It does my heart good to see people that believe in the root of the system, that it's God and country. And I believe that we still have that element of society. And thank God for those people. And I just want to say thank you to each one of our listeners for listening to this program, because what Mr. Shipp has given us so far tonight has just been incredible information, whether it's about the bigger picture of Benghazi or the intricacies thereof, or the domestic and world situation. It's information you're not going to find elsewhere. Line up, folks, on the phone, 661-244-9839. That's 661-244-9839. We're going to go to your calls now. Let's see. We're going to go to 406. You've been waiting the longest. 406, we're going to go to you. 406, you're up. Turn down your device. And what's your question for Mr. Shipp?
No, I can't.
Okay, 406, you're up, buddy. One more time, 406. All right, we're going to put you back on hold there. We're going to go to 719. 719, coming to you. Just make sure your radio or device is turned down. And what's your question for Mr. Shipp?
My question is radical Islam going to be a problem in the United States since we have that to think about?
Wow. That's a great question.
Yes, it is. Thank you for your question. It's a very good question. Radical Islam is already a problem in the United States. There are terrorist training camps, 33 that we know of that have been identified, probably twice that. I've identified three myself. We've actually been in there and taken pictures of a group called Muslims of America. The Christian Action Network, highly recommend them. They've done a tremendous study on radical Islam within the United States, and there is an active jihadist movement within the United States. They have bought property. They are training on that property. One is in Virginia. I've actually gotten in there just like the old days and taken some pictures. So radical Islam is active in the United States, and it is growing. And there are huge, huge populations, Islamic populations, and if the right spark is lit, could really mobilize. But there are jihadists actively in this country. They have training camps. We've identified several of them. I have an inside source within the government who has confirmed that himself. That is his area of expertise. And there are several across the United States.
Kevin, and thank you for the call, caller. Kevin, let me just say this. You mentioned the Muslims of the Americas, which is the organization led by Sheikh Mubarak Ali Jalani.
Right.
In 2003, 2004, 2005, I had conducted, along with my partner who has since passed, covert surveillance operations at Islamburg at the foot of the Catskill Mountains in New York State.
Yeah.
Okay, now, were you aware, by the way, that Sheikh Mubarak Ali Jalani has dedicated a portion of his website? He issued a public religious statement against me for my report that I submitted to the FBI.
No, I'm not, but I would consider that an honor.
Yeah, I do, actually. And in fact, I should put this back up on my website at HomelandSecurityUS.com. But we got in there, and we did conduct some covert surveillance operations at the periphery of the compound. And as we wrapped up the surveillance, we had interviewed neighbors and other people. And, inside that compound, and I'm probably not telling you anything you don't know, but folks listening, there was a school. One thing that really shook me was a school bus parked inside this compound, just riddled with bullet holes. And according to neighbors, now again, this is piecemealing, this is not chronological in nature, the information I'm giving you, this is just piecemeal now. But Kevin, they were doing raids of this school bus, armed raids, and using what neighbors had said were definitely automatic weapons.
Yeah, I'm sure, yes.
Okay, and here's the thing, Kevin, and this is when, and ladies and gentlemen, this is when I kind of, I don't know, knew that something was horribly wrong. When I turned over a binder of photographs, a DVD of video, and a report that, and in fact, it was, my report was cited in the Regional Organized Crime Institute. I'm trying to remember the name of that, but nonetheless, about that compound. In fact, the Christians Action Network, I gave permission to use some of my photographs, and Dr. Paul Williams had written about the Islamberg compound and dedicated a chapter to my investigation. But having said all that, what turned my, what really turned me is when I gave this to the FBI, it was like on a Monday morning, the Department of Justice. They had it in their hands on a Monday morning. By Monday afternoon, Jelani knew all about it. Now, how does that happen?
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. What I'm being told is these investigations, they're ordering them to stop. Actually, they're ordering the FBI not to investigate any of these cases. That is largely driven by organizations like CARE, the Council for American Islamic Relations, ISNA, and others who have a hold on government. They've threatened and enacted. I think even Christian Action Network, I think CARE had levied a $50 million lawsuit against them. And it's called lawfare. It's what it's what those organizations do. So the FBI, in conjunction with the new ideology of this administration, will not touch domestic terrorist operations, including some of the ones you and I are talking about, some of the sites we know about. They will not touch them. They will not go in there. The sheriffs have been told not to go in there, and the FBI has been prevented from doing any investigations. That's all tied into the current administration we have now in place that is preventing counterterrorism operations from going forth, and they have stopped the FBI from penetrating mosques, which, frankly, many of which are operational centers for jihadists. Sorry, it's just true. But they've been forbidden now from going in there, and the FBI itself has been stopped from investigating these things.
That's, well, unfortunate. 715-715, we're coming to you next. 715, you're on with Kevin M. Shipp.
Hello?
Going once. Yeah, you're up.
Hello?
Sir.
Hello?
Yes.
Am I on?
You're Doug, on.
What an honor to
yes.
speak to you. My name is Brent. I'm from Wisconsin. I sent some of the stuff for the alerts for Quail on the upcoming events. Just like to say it's an honor to speak to you, and God bless you. And I just love the excerpt. I voted for him, Paul Ryan, a man with some testicular fortitude, and more of us Christians got to get more of it. And another little saying I have is they can have my gun, bullets first. God bless, and thank you so much for everything you do. I'll get off the line and let them... What now?
No problem. Do you have a question or anything for Kevin?
No, I agree with 99.999% of everything that's said. So I just keep in the faith, and God, family, country, just bless us all, keep us safe through all this. Like I said, just an honor to speak with you.
All right, brother.
Thank you so much for everything you guys have done. Just appreciate it so much. But no, don't have any questions.
Okay.
Just got to listen to the podcast again. I listen twofold, live, and again on a repeat.
Oh, man.
So whatever I missed, I catch on to. So
I got to tell you, this is one to listen to twice.
Yep. Oh, yes, absolutely. And then tell Joel happy anniversary, so...
I will do
I
that.
Hope you're
all
having
right.
a good night. All right. You
I
take care.
So
God
too.
Bless.
All right, brother. Thanks.
All
there
right.
You go.
Bye.
All right. We're going to go to 785. 215-785 area code. You're up with Mr. Kevin Shipp.
Hey, Mr. Shipp. Thank you for taking my call. My name is Jesse.
Hey, Jesse.
Yeah, I live in Kansas, right about in the middle of it, and people keep talking about, you know, having a bug-out place. And I live in a town about, oh, I don't know, about 50,000, something like that. And, you know, Kansas doesn't even have a good cave to hide in, all right? It's, and so what I wonder is that...
Well, pick a silo. Pick a silo.
A silo?
I'm just kidding.
Is that what you said?
Yeah, dig a silo. Dig a, you know, never mind. Go ahead. What's your question? I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. That's quite all right. I'm open to anything right now because I've exhausted my ideas on this, and I've been thinking about it for quite some time. But anyway, my question is that, you know, in a town of this size, about 50,000 approximately, is it the kind of town that a person should bug out from, you know, when it starts to hit the fan, or do you... Do you wait till you see the National Guard on the street or whoever it is, you know, that they're going to put here? I mean, I really don't know, you know. We're basically a farming community here, you know, and I just don't know what the right thing to do is. Or the
That's
right
a good question.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kevin, what do you think? I mean, his situation is not unlike mine. I mean, I live in northwestern Pennsylvania, kind of a big, small town or a small, big town, but it's pretty spread out. I mean, we're looking at domestic uprisings here, I'm sure. But are we safe in the suburbia or in these stretched-out towns?
Well, I'd say you're a lot safer than people are going to be in the cities. That's going to be mayhem. And what I would say in that case is your best defense is to surround yourselves with friends and family. Your neighbors and people that you can trust is kind of your shield. And in cases like that where there's no place to go literally hide in, that's your best defense. My wife and I have a little piece of property that's surrounded by family, and that's kind of our outer layer of security. Everybody knows everybody. Everybody trusts everybody. And I think in the final analysis of things hit the fan, so to speak, it's going to be that kind of trust and friendship that's going to protect people and carry them through.
Good point.
Well, you know, I live in this town, and I 3 years ago or better even, you know, I realized that there's something wrong, and I started, and I'm a very outspoken person, and most people shouldn't even do it the way I do it because there's too much. I've told so many people and talked to so many people, and that they know who I am now. And if it ever does come down, hey, I remember that guy. Remember him? You know, they're going to be coming to my house, and I'm probably going to have to shoot them on the front steps. But if it does boil down to, you know, the kind of scenario that I'm thinking it's going to boil down to, but these people around here still are just like anybody else. They don't want to hear about it. They don't want to be wasted their time with it. And I don't have, you know, there's seriously, I bet you four or five people is all I know in this town that are, and that doesn't mean I know a lot of people, but I know a lot of people, though, that are on board with this idea, that are actually doing something. So there's not those friends and family, you know, around to protect you. I don't have that, all right? Not here.
Oh, yeah. Your neighbors, though, I think you can form a good structure with your neighbors, good support system there. You know, Kevin, I don't know, your family, do they see the bigger picture here, and do they feel in their bones that things are not right?
Well, you know, that's the kind of the sad part about it. On my wife's side, being Georgia people, they get it. On my side, coming, they're all up in Northern Virginia and Washington. They don't really get it yet. You know, there's going to be a lot of people. Not only do they not get it, they really don't want to get it. You know, they don't want to look at this ugly picture that could possibly be out there. You know, and it's been like that down through history. What was that famous verse? They were marrying and giving in marriage until the flood came and took them all away. And, you know, that's down through history. There have been populations that have been in denial Nazi Germany is a prime example, except for one of my personal heroes, Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Everybody else just went the way that Hitler directed them to go, claiming it was for their benefit. So I hate to say it, but what you got to do is you got to just do your best to educate, which is what Doug is doing this evening. Educate the people close to you as best you can and as gently as you can. And that's all you can do. A lot of people just don't want to hear it. And then when things go awry and economically, eventually, they're going to, by all accounts, they're going to. It's going to be very sad because those people are going to have nothing to stand on. So that's the very sad part of this, especially in the cities. There are going to be a lot of people who are caught off guard. Some of them are going to be our family, and some of them are going to be our friends. I always come back to this because, you know, when you start to lose hope, you got to remember that America was founded on prayer, and America can be founded again on prayer. So when all else fails, get to praying, man. And because it's God and divine providence that got us the freedom we have today. And no matter what happens, it's going to be that same creator and divine providence that's going to protect us from what's coming down the road. So those are the two things, at least humbly, that I would say.
Yeah, I'm with you. It doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't matter how well prepared you are. If you ain't got God on your side, you know, it's fighting an uphill battle. Just one more question related to the same subject, and that is, if a person decides, hey, I got to get out of this town, or, you know, they're coming in, they got the National Guard or whoever's setting it up, how far out of town do you have to be not to get caught up in that web? How many miles out do you think
you
guys should be?
If I can answer that, with the satellites that they have up there now, NSA's capability, there's really no place you can hide, frankly. You know, people get off the grid, and I think that's great. And we know people are doing that, and it's really fascinating and even kind of fun. But there are satellites up there that can catch you and read your license plate wherever you are. And, of course, the NSA is monitoring everything electronic. So, you know, if you want to hide, it's not impossible, but it's very difficult. So, yeah, the question is, how many of us out there are they going to have to try to round up if it gets that bad? You know, we have talked to and lectured to thousands and thousands of people out there, kind of this underground movement of freedom that, you know, if they're going to move against one person, they're going to be moving against thousands. So, you know, you can take heart in that. But the fact of the matter is, with the technology they have today, it's very difficult to hide from the government if they want to find you.
Thanks for that call. We're going to move on to a call in Hawaii. Coming to you next, Hawaii, you're up.
Aloha.
Aloha. What's your question for our guest, Mr. Ship?
Hey, well, this is Kawhi Guy. I think it was good to meet you there, Doug Bozeman. And my question is, it's, you know, like there's not a whole lot of information about Hawaii. I just wonder if he has any specific intel to Kauai or the Hawaiian Islands. I mean, normalcy bias is real big over here, and we're ignorant. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of preparedness, like hurricane preparedness, you know, awareness of that
by
kind.
By the way, I remember meeting you, by the way, sir, in Bozeman.
Yeah, that was great.
I know who you are. Any specific intel, Kevin, on Hawaii, on the Hawaiian Islands?
Of course, there's a big and active government presence there in Hawaii, obviously. Hawaii, since there is an active government presence there, is going to be no different from any other state in the collective United States. So I think it's going to be pretty much the same situation in Hawaii as it is in any other state.
Yeah, if I turned off the news and if I turned off the Internet, nobody here would, you know, I wouldn't even know anything that's going on in the world at all. Yeah, you know, except we're getting high prices are natural here anyway. But you know, like Steve Quayle, when he was flying over here, he had the vision, you know, God told him he was over Ground Zero, over Barking Sands. But there's not too much information I hear about. you know, like FEMA camps and stuff like that. Or I've only met a couple of Muslims in 28 years I've been here. But anyway, thank you.
All right, buddy. Yeah, God bless you, my friend. It was good to meet you. We're going to go to Montana, 406. 406, you've been holding quite a long time. You're up. Go ahead, sir. Ma'am? Sir? 406? 406, you're up. All righty, we're going to put you back on hold here. We're going to go to 408 and then 740. Get as many as we can in here. So 408, you're up. 408, you're up.
Yes. Hello. Can you guys hear me?
We can.
Okay, great. Well, I want to thank you for your show, and God bless you guys. I've been listening to you for about a year now. I'm a young father, currently 22. I have two girls and a wife, and I'm from Northern California. And okay. I just want to, let's see, I've been preparing and, you know, trying to get my survival kit going on, and pretty much just like everybody else that's been calling in, any ideas of how it might turn out being from California in a big city of about a million? All I have is some foothill mountains close by. Other than that, I just live in a three-story apartment building and with a family, and that's it. Nowhere really to hold down and have a family home where we can just stay put. You know, we would have to actually leave. Any suggestions, ideas?
That's a tough one for me, Kevin. What do you think?
Well, yeah, and that's a situation that a lot of people are in. Not everybody can bug out to a farm or to the hills. As a matter of fact, most people can't. And, you know, we would do this overseas, too, in certain countries that were unstable. You know, there's a time when the only thing you can do is shelter in place. And what I'd recommend in that case is to get 3 to 6 months' worth of food. Freeze-dried is always good because you can store it in very small spaces. Have a water supply, an extra water supply stored away, or some water purification tablets, and enough things to keep your family alive, fed and protected while things are happening, and just shelter in place that way, because many people like yourself, really, that's the only alternative you have, is just shelter down and protect your family.
Right. All right. Well, thank you very much, and God bless you guys, and remember to let's keep all the believers here in the United States in prayer, and especially the church at the sleep. And God bless you guys. Thank you very
Indeed.
Much.
You bet. God bless you, too.
All righty. We will hold him in prayer as well. We're going to go to – I'm going by the hold times, folks. So 740, you're up. 740, you're up.
Hi, Doug.
740.
Oh.
Hi, how are you?
Hey. Good show tonight. I don't know. I need just a couple calls. I had a couple questions for you, Mr. Shipp, and I just wanted to – maybe ask a question after that, but starting with Obama, like, how did he get from community organizer to where he is now, to where he's able to broker deals with terrorist groups and everything that he's doing now? Is it the elites that are funding this? They tell him what to do? Or, you know, what do you think about that?
So I'll tell you what, that's probably the most powerful and important question anyone could ask. That is the big question. How did he get from a community organizer to the president of the United States with millions of dollars coming in from somewhere? I'm telling you, anybody who can get the facts and answer that question, man, that's the $10 trillion question right there, and you're spot on. And it is a moving target. No one's been able, because they've been so good at it, and they've engineered this for several years, no one's been able to pin it down. So your question is spot on. There is a lot of mysterious stuff about this guy, little bits and pieces here that no one's been able to put the full picture together, and that in itself is alarming.
Yeah, my theory is that you look at all this stuff with the CIA and everything, and everything's been white papered out for everything that's going on. You know, take away the countries, hit them as their patriotism, hence the myth, their moral beliefs. You know, they can't have bring forth this new world order without attacking people. One for one, people fear of death and why am I here, where am I going, and what happens to me when I die. There's no way they could get us to do anything, really, without that. My other thought was some of these other callers. What do you think, we'll see martial law in other countries before America?
Well, you made two points. One great point is that Christianity and its morals and teachings are the only thing really that's holding this global press back. I remember a statement made during the Soviet Union was, we're able to conquest just about everything we can except those doggone Christians. We just can't seem to get to them. So they started locking them up. They just couldn't get the Christians to convert over to Marxism. Well, we've got the very same situation in the United States today. So that was a great point. It's the only protector of freedom that is left in this country, and that's why they're after it. That's why they've targeted it.
Right.
All right, my friend, we're going to cut you loose. I got to move on here. We got about 4 minutes left of the show. I just want to thank you for your call, my friend.
I appreciate it.
One more call here. We're gonna go to the El Paso area, El Paso, Texas area. Area code 915. You're on with Mr. Shipp. You got about a minute to ask a question.
Good evening, gentlemen. Really, not a question so much as just my observation. First of all, the powers that be brought those so-called Muslims here as a tool, just another tool to help destroy the country, just like a carpenter has nails and a hammer. It's just one of their many tools that they use, just like communism's really a tool, because the powers that be aren't communists. Satanists, but they're not communists. It's just a tool.
But their structure is communist. But go
ahead.
Well,
they were around before communism, really, because all that aside, over time, sometimes I teach people how to survive, even if they're in an apartment. But something really simple, if they just use their little thinking and do a MacGyver sort of meets, I don't know, Rambo. A garden wagon, take a couple of labs or a couple of German shepherds, teach them how to pull wagons. It's real easy with a body harness. And there's your bug-out vehicle, because you ain't going to drive if something happens and something hits the fan, so to speak. And you're just going to have to go on foot and get out of Dodge. And by the way, there are caves in Kansas. You just have to go southeast corner of Kansas.
Yeah, I got to get one of those garden wagons.
Well, I got one, and two or three good-sized labs or German shepherds can pull, and they have 800 to 1,200 pound capacity. I don't, suggest loading it to max, because 800 to 1,000 pounds, you can put a lot of stuff on there to survive,
You can.
You know, go online and learn how to make shelters out in the wilderness. And remember this, mud and stick will make your walls pretty good and cover it with rock.
They did it before.
In a nutshell.
Historically.
God bless you, my friend. Do it, Hey, thanks, you guys. Take care. God bless.
Right
you.
On. Thanks, El Paso.
All right,
buddy. God
bless Texas.
Actually,
right on,
I'm
man.
Fort Worth, but yeah. Anyway, God bless y'all.
Okay.
Still Texas.
That's all right.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, buddy. Thank
still
you
Texas,
so much.
That's right.
Yeah.
Republic thereof.
Yeah. All right. Kevin, you got the last word here. You got about 90 seconds. Go ahead and take us out.
Sure. Thanks, Doug. First of all, I thank God for your audience. It's always reassuring to know that there's good, God-fearing, patriotic people out there. And last time I talked to you, I had the same experience. And we got just some wonderful emails from your listeners that we so much appreciated. So we really care a lot about and appreciate your audience very much. And I would just say to everyone out there, keep the faith. Fear is the only weapon that they have. Keep your faith. Above all, pray for this country. I think God's judgment seems to be falling. Pray for this country and pray for your families. And we thank God, Doug, for what you're doing and for your audience. And we're glad that we can support you. And just God bless all of you.
Kevin, thank you so very much for being our guest tonight, for taking your time out, and thank your family for us as well for their gift, allowing you to come on, or you know, your presence away from them, or lack of presence with them. Thank you so much for being our guest, and I'll tell you, you really are a man's man. And folks, visit Kevin's website, Mr. Shipp's website. Go to homelandsecurityus.com, click on the link, or it is kevinmshipp.com, two P's, and definitely grab the book from the Company of Shadows. Also, if you are so inclined, drop him a note and tell him how much you appreciated hearing him on the Hagman and Hagman Report. Until tomorrow, folks, stay safe. God bless. Tomorrow, Joe will be back. Stan Dale tomorrow. Wednesday, Steve Quayle and our financial insider, V. Until tomorrow, good night and God bless. Kevin, thanks.
Thanks, Doug. God bless.
All right, good night.